He's Jim Brady. I am Marjorie Egan. Here we are at WGBH live during Snowmageddon at 89.7. WGBH already.
We're live, correct?
We are live.
By the way,
here.
I don't want to pat ourselves on the back. Marjorie skied in. What I did is I hooked my sled to the back of an emergency vehicle and just rode it right in here.
Give yourself some credit, Jim. You were like the National Guardsman running around picking up all members of the crew to get here. It was very, very impressive.
By the way, during the day, we're going to have Jared Bowen talking about what movies to watch while you're locked in your house. The governor is going to call us at 1 o'clock. We will cover live every major press conference. We have reporters all over the state. We'll talk to local officials. We really are your one stop for Marjorie's going to talk about how to walk the dog. She attempted to walk her dog this morning. We're going to be your one stop for all things Snowmageddon. And speaking of Snowmageddon, we're going to take your calls at 877-301-8970 throughout the next 3 hours. But first, we're joined on the line with a forecast for New England. Meteorologist Stephanie Dunton, she's with the National Weather Service. Stephanie, thanks so much on a busy day for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
So, Stephanie, when's the snow going to stop, please?
right now, it looks like snow will start tapering off sometime late this afternoon into the evening hours.
Okay, and that's in the Boston area.
Correct.
Okay. And I hear from my friends down the Cape, we didn't get these horrible winds in Boston, but they're talking massive winds down there.
Yeah, portions of the Cape and actually Nantucket is still gusting near hurricane force winds. So it is quite gusty down there.
You know, Stephanie, this storm started almost exactly to the minute as you and your colleagues forecast. The precision is pretty amazing these days. But is the intensity and volume going to be what you and others were predicting as recently as 24 hours ago?
We have generally been saying close to or around 2 feet of snow would occur with isolated amounts of 3 feet. And that seems to be the general trend. It's really hard to pinpoint where exactly an intense band of snow is going to be. But I can tell you that Framingham just came in with 30 inches of snow.
Wow. And New York City, where the mayor was beside himself, Mayor de Blasio, they got lucky. Is that because the track of the storm changes, or how does that happen, Stephanie?
What happened was that band never made it west, so our amounts out in Western Mass were not as high as we thought they would be. The amounts in New York City were not as high as they thought it would be. That band really never moved. It pretty much sat over Worcester and Middlesex County, and that's why we have those higher amounts there.
What, you know, we're hearing that after, are you projecting or forecasting a sunny day tomorrow? Is that what I hear from once the snow stops? Is that what's happening?
It will be mostly sunny and dry, no snow.
But I hear that there's going to be some snow event, if that's the term that you people use, later this week. One, is that true? And even if it is, it's I assume, going to be fairly minor by comparison, right?
By comparison, yes. We are watching another system impacting southern New England sometime Thursday night into Friday.
Excuse me for a second, please. A snow event?
I use the terminology. I use the right terminology.
Does this mean it's going to snow on Thursday night into Friday? Is that what that means, Stephanie?
It is possible, but to be honest, we're really focused on what's going on right now.
Okay.
We haven't really dived into what could happen Friday.
Let me ask you a meteorological question. I'm looking out the window. It's not windy. The trees aren't really moving much, but the snow is sideways. Now, how does that happen?
Although it doesn't look like it's windy outside, aloft, like higher in the atmosphere, it is quite gusty. So when the snow is falling, that's what's picking. That's why it's moving sideways, essentially.
Stephanie Dunn, where are we talking to you from?
Taunton, Massachusetts.
Now, are you like every other good weather person in the storm who brought their sleeping bag and toothbrush to work, or how did you pull this off?
We actually have a hotel that's right next door to the office, so we just walked over and bunked up in there for the night, and we came back this morning.
Stephanie Dunn, we really appreciate your time from the National Weather Service. Thanks so much for giving us a buzz.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
That's fairly heartening. We're going to be where we are, not worse. What's coming at the end of the week is going to be a minor snow event.
Snow event.
By comparison. But while they were obviously way off in New York City, I mean, de Blasio, we're going to play some sound later, was predicting the largest storm in the history of New York. A little embarrassment, I would say, but it's better to be prepared, as they say. Apparently, Boston and much of the Northeast, New England, is going to come in almost exactly as was projected. Our number is 877-301-8970. By the way, if you have photos of the storm. Particularly, Margie wants to see photos of how you're walking your pet. But anything, WGBH News at WGBH.org. Email them to WGBH News at WGBH.org. We want to know everything from recipes that are the best recipes when you're shut in, what you're watching, what games you're playing, how deep is the snow, how cold is it, how prepared were you, what are the conditions in your neighborhood, 877-301-8970.
And of course, when do you have to go out sledding? That was one of the things I always dreaded when my kids were little.
When are you forced to go sledding? Yeah, with your
and,
kids.
You know, it's really uncomfortable to be sledding when the snow is coming sideways like
yeah,
this.
It gets in your face.
But pretty soon, if you've got kids, you know, that are under 12, you're going to have to get out there with the toboggans and with those little round rubber things. What do you call those?
Round rubber things.
Anyway, saucers. Those little saucers. Yeah. And you're going to have to do it. And I'm glad my kids are grown up and I don't have to do that anymore.
You know, we get a lot of emails and texts this morning and tweets with suggestions. One of the best ones, because you don't know, there have been very few power outages other than Nantucket, where there was an interesting statistic.
Everybody.
Well, I don't know if that was a typo in the Globe. They said of 12,804 customers, 12,800 lost their power. Does that mean there were four customers on the whole island?
I think Nantucket is pretty bad because of the wind, and it's very
isolated
there, too.
I know it's bad, but
four
of them had power?
You know what else they said?
No.
Cell phones are down. It's not just the power, but the cell phones are down. That's kind of scary, and the ferries can't come and go because it's Nantucket. So they're kind of out by themselves on an island. And in Scituate, which, of course, is south of Boston, about 30 miles south of Boston, where they always have flooding issues down there, apparently there was a car that washed away and floated downtown. Imagine seeing a car floating down Main Street.
Incidentally, we've gotten a lot of great suggestions in case power outage does come later in the day, because as you heard from Stephanie Dunton from the National Weather Service, the storm is far from over. Wendy Murphy, our friend, texted me, pre-grind your coffee beans, which is an excellent idea, because if you lose power and you have them pre-ground and your stove is still working, as I think Matt Visor was explaining in his coffee column, whatever it's called, Double Shot or something, in the Globe, you can still do coffee, which is a pretty important thing. 877-301-8970.
And one thing we should point out, too, that we forgot to talk about with Stephanie is the next high tide is at 4 o'clock, and that could be a big problem, because Scituate was in trouble down there at the high tide in the middle of the night. Well, technically in the morning, 3:45 in the morning is when the high tide was getting scarier and scarier, and they declared a state of emergency down there at 4:55. And the next tide, as I said, is scheduled for 4 p.m. today. So that's a scary situation. Hummerock, that whole area down there in Marshfield, those places that are so close to the water, they have problems every time. The cars, I think, were almost up to the windows underwater.
So let's take a couple of calls. We're going to be joined by John King in a couple of minutes from CNN. The governor is going to call us at 1 o'clock. Again, we expect to hear from a ton of local leaders and others throughout the day. Dee, you're in Fall River. You were first on Boston Public Radio. How's it going in Marjorie's hometown, Dee?
Good morning. How are you?
We're great. We're inside and it's warm. What's up with you?
It is here, too. We didn't lose our power, which was awesome. We usually don't. But I did want to tell you, the snow, after snow blowing and everything into the yard, the kids are outside. We invited our daughter and our grandchildren to come and stay. The snow is almost up to their chest.
Well, that's pretty great.
And they're walking around like pelicans, lifting their feet up, trying to get out of the sand, except they're trying to get out of the snow, and they keep throwing themselves in.
Can I tell you, if anybody has the right attitude in Massachusetts, it is you.
That's
great. You are one happy woman, Dee. And you know, I know, it's great. It's great. And by the way, almost everybody, Dee, thanks for the call and have fun today. Almost everybody is paying attention to what Baker and Walsh and all the other local leaders have said. I drove, I started in Cambridge.
That's right.
Was in Brookline, was in the South End.
Like Odysseus.
End, whatever.
Making his way.
That wasn't my point. But my point is, I don't think in the hour that I was on the road, maybe went 8 miles, I don't know how many miles I went, in and around Boston, I don't think I saw three civilian vehicles, as they say. A lot of snow shoveling, you know, pickup trucks and that sort of stuff. But essentially, people really paid attention. There's virtually nobody on the street. There is virtually nobody driving who should not be driving. So it's actually pretty impressive.
Well,
and people can stay home like Dee and actually have some fun with the family.
I think really, unless you had to go to work today, why would you go to work today? When you could stay home and relax and make macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, but there's still tons of... Didn't you expect the streets to be littered with people driving around who don't really need to be driving around? We're right, by the way, we have this... What kind of window is this called?
It's a great big a glass window.
Whatever, I know, glass window. But what are those kinds of windows called? In any case, we have a huge window. Whole side, one of our sides of the studio.
20 feet by 6 feet.
It's more than that, actually. But it looks out on Market Street, and I don't think we've seen a non-snowplow vehicle since we got in the studio at about 10:30.
Snowplows and state police.
Let's go to Sheila in Norton. I'm sure you're well-prepared. Sheila, welcome to Boston Public Radio. Hi there.
Jim, I think you're being out in the snow probably added to the Yeti sightings.
Thank you. That's probably true, yeah.
But we've got plenty of snow here. It's still snowing. And I was telling your screener that I actually planned my snow shoveling to 11 to 2 so that I have you on my phone and enjoying the shoveling to be able to listen to the radio.
By the way, speaking of shoveling.
Thank you, Sheila.
This may be late to help you, Sheila, but since you are shoveling, there's this great site. It's called snowcrew.org.
Oh, I love this.
And if you don't want to shovel or you can't shovel, this whole community kind of thing. A guy from where is he? Joe Porcelli or something started this thing. You go online, you say what your needs are, you say what your address is, I guess, which makes people somewhat nervous, but give as little information as is necessary. And hopefully someone's going to see it who's a neighbor of yours and come shovel your car out, shovel your sidewalk, or do something. Snowcrew.org. Now, Sheila, had you known about that, would you still have been shoveling?
Believe it or not, it's probably the only thing I love to do.
Exercise.
Yeah, I love it. I really do. And I was thinking you're going to have Jared Bowen on about the movie.
Yeah.
I had stocked up on Prosecco and wine and things, thinking, oh, we'll have a nice time. And I made a mistake of watching The Days of Wine and Roses.
Oh, no!
And Lee Remick. About two alcoholics, so I wouldn't advise watching that if you're lining up your cheese and crackers.
It is depressing, but it's a great movie. One of them, I think he did. He win an Academy Award for that. Somebody won an Academy.
I looked it up. They both should have. Both lost because of some competition. But fabulous movie, just not the time to watch it.
The only thing more depressing than that movie, Sheila, is you saying it's the only thing you really enjoy is shoveling, which really is rather sad.
Is depressing.
But thank you for the call. Oops, I'm sorry, Sheila. I didn't mean to cut you off, but thanks for the call.
Christopher just emailed about one of your colleagues at NECN, Jim. What? Christopher says, I knew it was a big storm when I saw NECN's Mike Nikitas with a sweater vest on NECN last night.
By the way, they have great meteorologists, I should say. I mean, they really
do.
Matt Noyes is fantastic. They have it. Well, it's not just Matt Noyes and Tim Kelly and Nelly.
Nelly Correa,
the whole bunch of them. They are really, really top of the line.
Well, you know what's so funny? They're so into it. I remember years ago when I worked at Boston Magazine doing a story about some of the famous meteorologists of days of yore, you know, Dick Albert and Bob Bruce Schwegler, the guy that predicted Bob Copeland, the guy that predicted the Blizzard of 78, the only one that actually did. And they talked about, I remember Dick Albert talking about how when he was like 6 years old, he'd have his little weather ruler out in the backyard and measuring how much snow they got.
They're weather nerds. I love
Absolutely.
It, though.
They're really into it. Now, of course, they have the Doppler radar, so the individual skill doesn't matter as much. But back in the day, Jim, you had to really know what you were doing.
By the way, Margie and I have been trying to figure out, I think since it was 1999, what Doppler radar is. So if anybody knows, give us a buzz, 877-301-8970. You heard the first couple of calls, and that's what we're going to do throughout the day. Sprinkled amongst them will be public officials, reporters from WGBH, people like Jared Bowen with suggestions about movies to watch when you're locked in your house. Obviously, Days of Wine and Roses is not one of them. And Marjorie, you wanted to give people a little bit of hint. You have a very small dog, as we know, so you can't just let him loose because obviously he will disappear. How did you deal with the obvious before I picked you up this morning?
Well, it was tough. You know, I have a hair dog as opposed to a fur dog, so you have to put the coat on, and that makes him look even more silly because he's a small dog. But
so how'd that go?
Well, I had to shovel out some runway so he could go out and do his business. But
how'd that work?
He was having no part of it.
Is that true?
Oh, no. He was not happy about being out there. He started
shivering. Back in the house?
Picked up his little feet, so he's back in the house.
Do you have little booties? When you have a dog that small, and your dog is rather small, as we know, do you have little booties on the feet of the dog?
Well, I put this stuff on called the Mush Aid, which is for the sleigh dogs up in Alaska. So it's kind of like Vaseline you put on their feet to protect them from the salt and stuff. I got those booties that look like little balloons.
Yeah, I know what they are.
But he bit them off, so that didn't work too well. But you do see some dogs with the balloons, but mine will not be one of them.
By the way, I was using Mush Aid myself this morning. I don't have a dog, but I was. We got to take a break. Coming up in a couple of seconds is a local guy who I don't think has to deal with a storm. John King from CNN is going to join us. We're going to talk politics for a bit. We're also going to talk about storms which have made or broken politicians. John King and you after this. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. It's a ghost of campaigns past. Hillary Clinton is the only one who's back. Sarah Palin, Donald Trump, a whole bunch are preening for their close-ups as they tease the public about their presidential ambitions. Joining us online to separate the political heavyweights from the perennial dilettantes is CNN's chief national correspondent, John King. Hello there, John.
I like coming a little later in the program. I get to hear you guys talk about movies, and you want me to explain the Doppler effect?
Can you actually do it?
Bounce a radar off something, and then you judge the frequency and how it comes back to you. That's how you tell how wide it is and how fast it's moving. You know, it's the same thing they use in a police speed gun. Same basic technology.
You are a man. That's why of we all have John seasons, King on. I'll tell you, Renaissance man. I'm
Thank
so
you,
impressed,
John.
You
were talking about the greats of Boston weather. You know, Dick Albert, those guys, Bruce Schweiger, and the like. So I grew up with those guys.
We know that.
Then I moved to Washington. I said, "What am I going to do?" Well, we had Marion Barry when he was mayor of Washington. If he was in Jamaica, you knew it was going to snow. That's how it worked.
You know, we were talking this morning, John. Obviously, the legendary story is from 1978, Michael Dukakis in the bunker with his sweater taking charge. But, you know, through the years, there have been storms that have either ended careers or nearly ended careers or made careers. Who are some of those people?
You know, I was a sophomore at Boston Latin School in those days, and mm-hmm. we built these giant snow houses at Wainwright Park in Dorchester. What do we have, 3 weeks off from school, I think?
So a long time.
Yeah, the blizzard of 78 remains near and dear to my heart. I love it very much. Remember just last year, we thought Nathan Deal might lose re-election for governor of Georgia because they had a surprise snowstorm.
Oh,
and
right.
He was a buffoon the first few days, essentially. You know, Republican state, he managed to hang on, but that one got interesting. I was joking about Marion Barry, but that always did become an issue here. He just had this fortuitous timing where a couple of times he happened to be in the islands when the rare snowstorm came to Washington. You see that happening. It'd be interesting now to see if the New York City mayor gets blowback for overreacting. I think most politicians would much rather be safe than sorry.
Well, speaking of that, let's hear from here. Here's Bill de Blasio, Cambridge Ringen Latin graduate, I should say, now the mayor of New York City. Here he is preparing New Yorkers for the worst on Monday.
We are facing most likely one of the largest snowstorms in the history of this city, in the recorded history of this city. So this literally could be one of the top two or three largest storms in the history of this city, and we need to plan accordingly.
Never mind.
So if people call him a big, you know, crying wolf kind of mayor this morning, or is this a little blip?
Well, I think you'll hear some of that. You'll hear he overreacted, and he's, you know, look, it's New York. You know, we're like this in Boston. You can multiply it by 10 in New York. They'll say he's chicken, you know what, and they'll say, you know, he was afraid. At the same time, imagine if they did get hit. And look, he has to listen to the weatherman just like we do. He has to listen to the meteorologist just like we do. It's the only job in life where you're wrong a lot and you still get to keep your job. And I'm not, you know, they're doing their best, I'm sure, and some are better than others. But imagine if he had said, nah, we'll duck this one. We're New York. We're tough. And they had got whacked. And you had trains stuck in subway tunnels or trains stuck up on the tracks with people in them and cars spinning out, you know, in damage and people stuck in downtown, you know, Central Park and in the neighborhoods because they couldn't get home because then public transportation did shut down. It's forced to shut down. So, look, do they overreact sometimes? Sure. But overreacting beats underreacting because if you're not prepared, you do pay the price. And we've seen that in the past.
You know, one last weather thing, John, before we move on to straight politics for a couple of minutes with you. I was of the opinion, I don't know if your data bears this out, but the hug on the tarmac between Chris Christie and Barack Obama, in my estimation, really helped Obama to show he's bipartisan. He's going to help a Republican governor who was the keynoter, trashing him at the Republican convention right before the election. Did the early handling of Hurricane Sandy by Christie help Christie? I know some of the homeowners are saying a year or so later they didn't. None of the promises were fulfilled. But was that a boost for Christie early on?
It was a boost for his leadership standing at the time. Democrats never had a real opponent to run against him, so he was going to win anyway. And guess what? President Obama was going to win anyway. But it did change the conversation at that point in the campaign. Remember, Governor Romney was trying to get some traction, and we all focused on Sandy for a few days. And I think if you think of it as a traditional electorate where the left is going for the Democrats, the right is going for Republicans, and you're fighting for the middle, sometimes we overplay this narrative. But sure, it helps the president to have at a time when Mitt Romney, who's running as a skilled executive, is saying Obama doesn't have the chops to run the country, and you have a Republican governor who's a Romney friend say, thank you, you're helping save my state, I appreciate it. But, you know, it doesn't hurt, and of course it helped some. Did it change the election? No, not in any win or lose way, but it changed the dynamic at that moment. And if Romney was going to somehow find traction, that moment in time made it a lot harder.
We're talking to John King, CNN's national correspondent. Let's talk about Iowa, John, and the Republicans out there. I mean, apparently no one is taking seriously Donald Trump's announcement that he is seriously thinking about running yet again in 2016. But in Inside Politics, I think you were saying that those of us who were making fun of Sarah Palin for saying she's going to run again may be too quick to misunderestimate her.
Not exactly. Number one, let me say this about Trump. This is a surface act, and anyone who takes the bait is an idiot. He has said this for three, if not four, consecutive presidential cycles. He's a great self-promoter. I tip my hat to him. As a self-promoter of his businesses and his TV shows, but this, I mean, give me a break. And he'll, you know, if the Donald T's mocked me before for saying this about him, great, bring it on. You know, if sign the papers, start going to town halls, do the work, organize the staff, and then I will listen to this malarkey, that's a kind word, about Donald Trump. For Sarah Palin, I don't think she's going to run. I think she likes the attention, much like Donald Trump. She likes the attention, and she likes to promote her brand. My point is that if she runs, she surprised people by first in Vegas the day before she came to Iowa saying she was looking at it, and then in Iowa saying she was seriously looking at it. She surprised people by saying that because she doesn't have – she is a brand, and she can move around with these conservative groups and her own organization and raise money. And so when she said it, it did make people's heads snap back a little bit, and I don't think she's going to run. But if she ran, if you think about her appeal to Tea Party voters, to social conservatives, grassroots women in the Republican Party, if she runs, if you're Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson and Ted Cruz and one or two or three or five other people on what we would say the right, the social right, the evangelical right, the Tea Party right of this very big Republican field, she's a problem for you. Is she going to win Iowa? I don't think so. Is she a credible candidate for the nomination of the presidency? I don't think so. But if she were to run in a crowded field, a tiny slice of the pie can impact the rest of the race. So we're going to have to watch her. I'll, you know, 99.9 cents of my every dollar says she's not running. But you got to keep an eye on her.
You know, Sarah Palin and Donald Trump, as I'm sure you can imagine, John King, are radio gold. So let's hear a little. This is Iowa radio show host Jen Mikkelsen spoke at the outset of the Iowa Freedom Summit. After Mikkelsen, you'll hear Scott Walker, obviously Wisconsin, Sarah Palin, and Trump himself. Listen.
A very star-studded lineup today. And by the way, just for the record, let the pandering begin. All right. Anyway, sorry.
I made a critical mistake. I went to a Kohl's department store and I bought something for the price it was marked at. Right? My wife said to me, you can never go back there again until you learn how to shop at Kohl's.
You know, the man can only ride you when your back is bent, so strengthen it. Then the man can't ride you. American won't be taken for a ride because so much is at stake.
I am seriously thinking of running for president because I can do the job. Thank you all very much.
I think the less said, the better. Oh, my goodness. So at the same time, John, that all this is happening in Iowa, Barack Obama continues to get mini bump after mini bump. Gallup has him at 50% approval, 45% disapproval. I know it's a little higher than some of the other polls. Is this State of the Union? Is it economy? What is it?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think it's he's being optimistic and he's being aggressive and he's not hiding and sulking. And I think that helps when people see you fighting. I think there's no question the improving economic data and not just the improving numbers, but the perception that, you know, we've talked about this for a couple of years, that the president had some good numbers on his side last year, but people just didn't feel it. Well, a lot of people still don't feel it, but more and more people are beginning to think, okay, I can put my head up and not be afraid I'm going to get thumped, or, okay, you know, now I can think about maybe taking a vacation this summer. And so declining gas prices, better jobs numbers, better economic growth has the country in a better mood, and leaders benefit when that happens. Plus, you know, after an election in which the Republicans win just about everything, I think people are looking for what happens next in divided government. And while people repudiated the president last year, I think part of the public opinion poll movement we're seeing is people saying, but you're still president and don't waste the last 2 years. Let's see what you got. And it's important to watch. If his numbers stay above 50, look, we were already after the election to say this guy's a lame duck. He's done. The Democrats are going to hand the torch to Hillary and forget about Barack Obama. That is what happened to George W. Bush. They didn't know who to hand the torch to in 2006, 2007. But the Republican Party did say, forget about George W. Bush. And the Democrats had already given up on him because of Iraq and Katrina. And so we had 2 years adrift in Washington. If the president can keep his numbers above 50, well, then Republicans, you know, the president can't pass anything he wants because Republicans run both chambers in Congress, but the Republicans can't pass anything they want because he's got the veto power.
Yeah.
So the question is, does he get strong enough to force some deal, some compromise on some questions? And the better his numbers, the more likely that Republicans will be forced to do some real business with him.
You know, John King, you've heard everybody. You mentioned how Obama seemed to have been sulking for a while, and everybody after his State of the Union, that, you know, kind of take charge State of the Union address, was talking about why hadn't he done this during the campaign. You've been watching him for a long time. What do you think happened? You know, obviously the numbers are up, but it had to be more than that to kind of go from the where's the president sulking mode to, like, you know, charger of the light brigade at the State of the Union.
Well, it's a couple of different things. Number one is the economic numbers are better in late January than they were in September and October. So he can make a better case now. Again, not just the data, the economic data, but how people feel about it. People's own personal optimism is up in recent weeks, and that helps the president to be more optimistic himself. It's very hard to tell people things are great if they don't feel they're great. And so the president had that risk last year. Number two, and this to me is the biggest one, he wasn't invited, Marjorie, to go anywhere that mattered. What was he going to say? He was going to places. He was going to places where, you know, I'm here. You know, he was preaching to the choir. He was going to blue states and places he had won. He was hardly anywhere with a close race. I viewed the State of the Union not only as laying down a challenge to the Republicans, saying, here's where I am. But it was a couple other things, too. I think it was a message to a lot of former Democrats they're still Democrats, but former lawmakers who might have been watching from home, saying if some of you had tried this in last year's campaign and actually talked up health care, actually talked up the economy, actually drew sharper contrast with the Republicans on economic issues, some of you might still be here. But you chickened out last year because you ran from me like the plague. I think that was implicit in the president's message. And I think the other part of it is, look, if he sulks, if he stood up there and said, I lost, you won, what do you want me to do? Let's make deals. then he would lose the Elizabeth Warrens and the Nancy Pelosi and the Harry Reid. And if he loses them this early on, he's cooked.
Yeah.
So he had a choice to make. Fire up his base. We'll see what happens down the road. But his immediate choice was to have a spine, stand there and draw contrast, and fire up his base. It already has helped him because some Democrats are peeling away from voting against the president on this Iran sanctions bill. We'll see if enough of them do it. But already his party is saying, he's got some spunk. We got to stand with him a little bit longer. Let's at least slow down getting in his face on some of these things. And a few of them will walk away from it. We'll see if it helps him on Keystone. And then the question is, what happens in 4 or 5 months when you got to cut a budget deal? Then does he negotiate and make Democrats mad at him? Does he start giving things away? But in the short term, he helped himself politically. Will he get policy out of this? We don't know. But he helped himself politically, without a doubt.
Okay, John, three final questions. You may answer them in any order that you see fit. One, will Mr. Kraft, as he's called in these parts, get the apology he is seeking from the NFL? Two, are you going to the Super Bowl? And three, will the Patriots win the Super Bowl? Take it away, John King.
Okay, apology, probably not. Am I going? No.
Oh.
I enjoy going to Foxborough. I don't want to be a mile away in the stands in Glendale, Arizona, at a neutral site. I want to watch it with my friends, and we'll see all 10 HD angles and get to, you know, throw things and drink things and do all that. And what was the last one?
The only one that matters.
Were you silly enough to ask me who's going to win?
What's the score, John King?
Oh, what's the score? I'm going to say the score is 31-27.
Oof, that's a good game, too. John King, from your lips to Tom Brady's ears, good luck in the Super Bowl. Good talking to you, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday, John.
Thank you.
Thank you,
John King. And when we get back, we're going to take all your calls once again at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Give us a weather report from where you are. How much snow do you have? What are you doing? How are you passing the day? You going sledding with the kids? How are the dogs? You got any great in-the-house snow recipes? How about a great roast chicken? How about some chili in a day like this? Any emails or calls? We get some great pictures. Thank you, Janice. We're going to talk about those in a second from Scituate, where they're having big time flooding problems. Our number is 877-301-8970.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. The rest of our day, we just hung up on John King, who did talk about great moments in political storm history and some not-so-great moments. But the rest of today is you and people who are dealing with the storm at 877-301-8970. The governor will join us at 1 o'clock. We will pick up any press conferences that should matter to you. We have reporters, GBH reporters all over the place. Jared Bowen's going to call in about what movies to be watching. But the primary feature of today is you. How are you making it through the day? Marjorie's going to tell you one of her secret recipes, I think, or something. Do you even have a crock pot? A crock pot is what you're supposed to use.
I do not have a crock pot.
How can you not have a crock pot?
I don't know. I don't have a crock pot.
Why do you not have a crock pot?
I don't know.
You know what you do when you have a crock pot, by the way?
You leave in the morning, you turn it on, you come home at night, your dinner's all cooked.
And you buy the cheapest meat, and which is so tough you can't even tear it apart. And by the time you get home, it's like butter. What's the matter with you?
I don't know. I'm a disorganized cook. But I want to tell people, because we're getting emails about this, Grace and other people want to know about this this volunteer-run website to link strangers so they can come help you shovel your car or whatever. It's called snowcrew.org. Now, it was started by a guy in Jamaica Plain, so I'm not sure how extensive this is, and he's left town himself. But the idea is you go on to snowcrew.org, and you can post a description of the shoveling help you need, whether it's your car, your driveway, and maybe some volunteers will respond, and some young boys or girls that want to make some money will come over and shovel your driveway. Not everybody's happy about this weather, Jim.
What do you mean?
Patty just emailed and said she can't stand it. She's expletive deleted this weather. She says, I'm on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Can't get my dog out. I open the door and he runs up the stairs. She says she could power heat almost every cable channel. She's absolutely miserable. She feels like she's about to have a total and complete mental collapse. She wants to know if she can bring her dog with her to the hospital. The only thing that's making her feel better is looking online for waterfront property in warm weather.
Can I tell you, Patty, that's a really healthy attitude to get you through the day. Our number is 877-301-8970. So on one hand, there's Patty. On the other hand, there was Dee from Fall River, your hometown.
Ecstatic.
Who was it? The grandkid was over.
Yes.
The daughter was over. They were having a terrific day. But seriously, what are you doing? I mean, and by the way, you are home, I'm assuming, because, again, this window we have here, a whole wall of our studio on Market Street, virtually no cars other than snow plows and cops. And we actually haven't seen that many police officers go by. On the way here, weaving through the South End, Brookline, from Cambridge and then to the studio in Brighton, how many cars, after I picked you up in Brighton, in Brookline, how many civilian cars did we see? Any?
We saw the one guy that was stuck.
Oh, we saw one guy who was stuck, right,
yeah.
which we didn't stop to help him obviously, no, because we heard there were muffins in the newsroom, and we were afraid they'd be gone if our coworkers showed up
on time. Coworkers are here with their air mattresses.
I know,
love that.
Unbelievable.
They spent the night in the newsroom with their air mattresses.
The news staff did. It's pretty
incredible.
Unfortunately,
the lights didn't go off, so they had to sleep with all the lights on.
Hey, that's the price you pay if you really care about the news. 877-301-8970. As you heard, New York is a bust. We told you what de Blasio had a little bit of an embarrassment. Mm-hmm. New England seems to be right on course, exactly as the meteorologists were suggesting. Let's go to Holliston, where Gene is on the phone. Gene, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Thanks for the call. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. What's up?
I had a recipe in 78.
For what?
For snow cake.
What's a snow cake?
You make it with snow.
Oh,
and,
come on.
And what do you do
come
with
on.
It? Don't tell me you eat it.
Yes. You get fresh snow.
Gene.
Serious.
What if Marjorie's dog had walked by in the interim? What do you do about that?
No, you don't get yellow snow.
Oh, you don't. Okay.
No, you get white snow, Jim. White
you
snow.
You take a pan and you throw it out in the and all the snow that drops in it gets into the cake.
Mm. Okay. Sounds like it tastes really good, Gene.
Yeah, it's white flour naturally and white egg whites.
Oh, you really make a cake out of this thing.
Yeah.
And what does it taste like? Like snow?
No, I think it was a white cake when it got through. Okay. But, I mean, we're talking 78 here. I mean, you know, that was not yesterday. Well, I don't remember everything.
I understand. It was a long time ago. How is Holliston doing today? How much of a hit are you taking, Gene?
Well, I'm on the bottom floor, and it's sort of coming up to my windows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'd say 20 inches.
Well, if you make a snow cake and make it into Brighton, feel free to leave one off at the front door. Gene, enjoy the day. Stay safe. Thanks so much for the call. We're now going to go, I believe, to Worcester, where our WGBH colleague, Rupa Shenoy, is there. And my understanding, Rupa, is that as of something like 8 o'clock this morning, Worcester had already passed 2 feet of snow. Am I right?
That's what it looks like. It looks like more than that, actually, if you get into the banks. I actually tried to go out a little bit ago, and a very kind snowplow driver stopped and asked me to come back and wait to take a walk and get some comments from people. So I've done that and put some additional layers on, and I'm going to try and go out again. But there is no one out. I mean, no one is on the street.
And the snow is still coming down in that sideways, windy kind of deal.
Yeah, it's getting a bit better. It's more of just like a cloudy, persistent, annoying, you know, swirl. So it's a little bit better that way, but it's supposed to pick up in a little bit. And, you know, there's an immense feeling of pride here today, surprisingly. I mean, people are proud that they got hit the hardest, and they're doing pretty well with it. I mean, they're staying inside, and no outages, no major problems, and they're happy about it.
You know, and by the way, according to NECN this morning, Shrewsbury and Worcester are the two hardest hit communities in terms of volume inches. I mean, Worcester may end up even at 3 feet. You know, I want to go back to something you said, Rupa Shenoy, a minute ago. Marjorie and I commented, it is amazing to me how respectful people are being all over the state of what Charlie Baker and their local leaders asked them to do. There is virtually nobody on the street in Boston other than authorized vehicles. You're saying the same about Worcester. So what was it? Were they scared straight there? Or what's the deal? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I think that the requests to stay off the streets were really sincere, and they have been reinforced almost hourly by the Worcester officials, who are just very, very sincerely saying thank you to the residents and please keep it up. So the messaging has been very straight on and very direct and very consistent and very constant.
Well, that's what causes, I mean, when you think about it, what causes the disasters and these blizzards? It's cars stuck on the highways, people stuck in their cars, people trying to drive through flooded water. So if everybody stays off the road, it obviously makes things a lot easier. Did you drive to Worcester yesterday from Boston, Rupa?
I did, very slowly.
Yeah, I was going to say, how long did it take you to get there?
It took me almost 2 hours. I left before it got really bad.
Yeah.
I am already dreading the drive back.
When are you coming back?
I have no idea. I don't even know how to unbury my car. I mean, unlike, I'm staying in a hotel where there are many, like, it's practically all media, lots of TV, and the TV crews are great. They have, like, multiple people to dig out the cars, and I'm just looking at my car. I can see one window. I mean, it's going to take me hours.
Hey, Rupa, do you have a pen with you?
Yeah, why?
Snowcrew.org. It's this website that Chelsea found this morning. You get one of your fellow reporters to dig out your car, and then you're home free. That's a deal. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I don't know if they go that far afield. Rupa, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rupa Shenoy in Worcester. Again, 26 inches as of 8 or 9 o'clock this morning. The order, according to NECN's meteorologist, Shrewsbury, number one, a couple of hours ago, 31 inches. Worcester, 26. Chelsea at 22.
Yeah.
Obviously, 2 feet by now. That's pretty heavy duty for early in the morning in the city.
And Chelsea's on the border of Boston, of course. So
that was my point.
How come we only get 19 in Boston, Jim?
I don't know.
On top of that?
No, I don't. I'm going to have to check the Doppler radar. 877-301-8970.
You know, here's a question for people. I mean, if you live in the city, well, if you live anywhere, but you have to kind of clear the sidewalks for your neighbors and people, what is the snow etiquette? I think you can wait till the snow. Well, when do you have to go out and start? Do you have to start shoveling now? I mean, while it's still snowing? Or can you wait until things stop?
No, you have to do it, and then you have to do it again.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people don't do that. They don't want to go out with the snow in their face. Mm. I mean, every neighborhood has, and I have one in my neighborhood, the guy across the street, he's great. He is like the snow czar. He is out there shoveling. I mean, he shovels every couple of hours. He even kept shoveling after he got sick. He came out and kept shoveling. He's out there all the time, but I usually wait until the snow stops.
Mm.
Well, I'm serious. You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
No,
that's a big
I understand.
Deal.
It's a real dilemma.
I mean, do you feel bad if you're not out there right at the first break?
Do you feel bad? Depends on what movie you're watching. No. Let's go to Bob in Arlington.
I do feel bad.
Well, it's horrible. Then shovel the snow.
Well, I'm not here. I'm
well,
at
when
work.
You get there, go shovel it. Bob in Arlington, you're on Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Hey there, Bob. What's going on?
Made it in today.
Who, we did or you did?
No, you did.
Yeah, we are making a public service on Boston Public Radio.
Jim
so
is
what are
like
you doing?
Sir Galahad.
What are you doing at home there? What are you doing?
I just came in from shoveling, and I'm trying to do it in bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You know, just
kind of, you know, for an hour here, an hour there.
Sure.
But I had my my earbuds in listening to you guys. And on a side note, Jim, I was wearing a helmet.
Oh, great. No, it's always safe in this kind of weather to have a helmet. Thank
yeah,
you,
absolutely.
Bob.
Absolutely. You don't want
appreciate
to fall into one of those.
No,
snowflakes.
Never.
But you were talking about, you know, a good food for today.
Yeah, what is it?
And I have still in front of me, it was from last Wednesday's food section. I saved it because I've done like three recipes out of this section already.
You mean out of the Globe?
One of them. Yeah, in the Globe.
Okay, go ahead.
The 21st, Wednesday the 21st.
Okay.
And I've made this one already. It's slow roasted whole chicken leg.
It's the
thigh and the drumstick, you know, combined. The
My
whole
favorite
leg.
Part, yeah.
And it's so simple. And all you got to do is rub it with some olive oil, salt and pepper, and some sprinkle with fresh oregano. If not, I used oregano flakes, and it worked fine.
Wow.
And the tip is 325 for an hour.
Yeah.
And then you turn it up to 550 for a half an hour.
So it's crisp?
And it was crisp. I mean,
Bob,
it's not
you
Hammers.
The man.
It's not Hammersley's. I'll tell you. And there's also a great mashed potato, garlic and scallion mashed potato recipe in that same section, if anybody wants to look up that food section.
Oh,
and
we'll
I
tell,
did that last night, and it was awesome.
We'll tell Brian McGrory tomorrow how you were praising it. Hey, Bob, yeah. Before you go away.
You know,
yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, before you go away, I was stunned by how well-plowed virtually all the roads that I drove on this morning through my little South End Brookline from Cambridge to Brighton tour. What's Arlington like?
Well, I live on a pretty main street. I don't know if you're familiar with Pleasant Street.
Yeah,
Center. Okay,
yeah.
Well, I haven't ventured any further than the end of my front walkway, but there's no cars going by except plows, and Pleasant Street looks pretty good.
That's good.
I haven't ventured down to the center yet. Maybe a little later today. I don't know.
But Bob,
Arlington usually does a great job.
Great. Keep that helmet on, and thanks for sharing the recipe from the Boston Globe. Bob, thanks for the call. You're a huge chicken roasting fan.
I love chicken.
Doesn't that sound
I love
fabulous?
Roasted chicken. Yeah, a bunch of other good recipes for the snow. Beef stew. That's a great one to have in the
but
snow.
But that's obvious, yeah.
Baked beans.
Well, baked beans are good.
Yeah. Mac and cheese.
Where'd you get this from?
From the New York Times.
Macaroni and cheese is so, it's almost not much thought put in. I mean, that's a pretty obvious snow
Well, I'm
kind
just
of thing.
Telling you, the most popular ones, if you want to know, spaghetti meatballs, that's also big. Mm. Chickpea vegetable soup with rosemary.
Ooh.
That's very healthy.
That's fabulous.
We saw the governor of Rhode Island down there, and she, we noted, is Gina Raimondo. She's sporting a royal blue parka.
Well, you see, Charlie Baker, and we're going to talk to him at 1 o'clock, and apparently he's going to have press availability, which we'll carry live for you, too. He was in a very nice blue suit when this whole thing started, but this morning at 7 o'clock when he did a briefing from the bunker at MEMA, the Mass Emergency Management, he was sporting a zippered sweater.
Listen to this. What's from Art from West Bridgewater. He says he does a snow dessert as well. You put out a pan, let it fill with snow, pack it down, and pour homemade maple syrup on it.
I thought that woman Jean was kidding. I never heard of that.
Let
you heard
it
of
freeze
that?
Back up and eat it. Can add frozen berries and nuts as well.
Oh, boy, that sounds
I don't think
delicious.
I want to eat a snow
no, nor do I.
Cake.
Let's
or
go
pie.
To Elizabeth. You are somewhere near Worcester, I believe. Is that correct, Elizabeth?
Yes, we're in Phillipston.
Oh, Phillipston. So it's pretty bad down there, yes, in terms of volume?
Well, if you love weather, you love this day. It's absolutely, yeah. We've got almost 2 feet, and we live in the woods, and we have 2 wood stoves. And on days like this, we go out. The dog loves to be outside, and we've been on a long, long walk in the woods, and we saw, you know, deer tracks and moose tracks.
Listen to her.
Yeah.
Wow.
When I grow up, I want to be just like you, Elizabeth. I'll tell you, that is really, I'm serious. So what do you do when you're inside? What are you doing with yourself?
Well, I'm watching right now, when I've been listening to you, I've been watching. We have about 40 birds on our 4 different bird feeders.
Yeah.
And they're delightful to watch. They're woodpeckers and 1 or 2 blue jays, and they're just wonderful. So I wonder, where did most people lose that excitement about these days? You know, I mean, luckily we have a dog that loves the snow. and she's the weirdest dog in the world, but she loves the snow. And I almost lost her in the woods because we couldn't see her except for this big tail going through.
Listen to you. This is so great. I think the answer to your question, sadly, is why do people not find joy in these days? Because everybody defines themselves so much by what they do for a living, where they go for work, and all that sort of thing. And they don't take joy in the kinds of things that you and that first caller today are doing. And Elizabeth, it's great. Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Keep enjoying the day.
Well, listen to this from Joe in West Attleboro. He says, North Attleboro, excuse me. We're closing in on 2 feet of snow. The wind gusts around 40 miles per hour. My crock pot is bubbling away with a very hearty split pea and ham soup, courtesy of America's Test Kitchen. Our canine lavatory bypass is rapidly filling up for the second time. The fireplace keeping things toasty. Can barely make out the neighbor's house across the street. And I'm very glad I'm a public school teacher today.
What's a canine lavatory bypass?
Well, that could be – I don't know if Joe means the runway that you shovel for the dog, or I'm not sure what he means.
Or maybe there's
that.
Some mechanism that allows you to have your dog, go inside or something without
I don't
doing
know.
The...
Kathy from Scituate says it is bad, and the worst flooding they've seen in 20 years. We're going to hear from the governor a little bit after noontime, and he's going to talk more about that, the situation down there.
But, you know, in a sentence, if you just tuned in, essentially Massachusetts – is closed. That's what I have to say. Considering this is not the worst storm I've lived through here or elsewhere, this considering the intensity of the storm, this is as pretty shut down as I've seen at least Greater Boston ever. Frankly, it's pretty amazing.
Ari from Dorchester said his wife is from Siberia.
Yeah, so this is like a walk in the park.
This is a big deal, but. She said she was surprised at the diligence in which the snow was cleared, saying that people die in Russia and Kazakhstan because emergency vehicles can't reach the residents.
Hmm.
Gosh.
I know. It's a little different situation. Let's go to Walpole, where Kristen is on Boston Public Radio. Kristen, thanks so much for the call. Hi there.
Hi. Good morning.
And
Marjorie,
to you.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Excellent.
Fine.
Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
I am so excited to be on. I just love your show. I listen every day that I can if I'm
well,
not working.
Thank you. You're
thank
so nice.
You.
What's up?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, you know, I called for another reason, but now I'll just talk about food. I've gotten very excited. I'm making huevos rancheros for everybody here.
Ooh.
I thought that's kind of a fun one.
By the way, that's one of my
one.
Favorites. I love it. Go ahead, Kristen.
Yeah, I had to call in some help. I had to call my stepdad for the recipe. But so, listen, I was calling to say to remind our friends and neighbors here in the Northeast to make sure that they dig out their furnace exhaust pipe.
Oh, yes.
Ours was just literally within an inch of its life. So we had to dig that completely out. If not, it would have backed up in the house. So
it's a very good reminder. My sense is that people are not only staying home but taking precautions because you always feel like knocking on wood, which I'm doing now, at least as of an hour ago. There are very little property damage. There have been there have been some outages, obviously, in places like Nantucket in particular. I don't know. I have heard of no deaths from the storm, which is pretty spectacular this late in things. So I'm guessing that people are being as careful as you suggest they should be, Kristen.
And minimal power outages, I've heard.
No, it's really amazing. By the way, in New Hampshire and Rhode Island, just in the hundreds, which at least as of 8 o'clock this morning, and I think the max number in Massachusetts, unless it's risen, was somewhere in the low 20,000s, roughly 12,000 of which, and if I get that number wrong, someone will correct me in a minute, roughly 12,000 of which was on Nantucket. So the mainland has really experienced very few outages. Kristen, thanks for a great call. We appreciate it.
As of this morning, Duxbury was bad, Sandwich was bad, which of course is right over the Cape Cod Canal, and Nantucket, as you just mentioned, is really terrible.
Do you see, Dina from Dudley communicated to us in some fashion, I don't know if she tweeted or called and had to hang up, maple syrup on snow, Marjorie. You're a Vermont kid. For a few years.
I know.
It's called sugar on snow, and it's a tradition up in Vermont. You've never heard of this?
I've never heard of this.
Maple syrup on snow, sugar on snow, nor had I.
And these are like these snow cakes and snow pies people are talking about. Carolyn just sent me a picture of the snow pie she took in for her cat, who's an indoor cat. And she sent me a picture of him eating the snow pie.
And what's in the snow pie? That it was a catnip and ice? I mean, what is it?
It looks like snow.
It does.
Just looks like snow. So something I wasn't aware of. I mean, I know
you're
a
New England kid.
Well, you used to eat snow when you were a kid. That was the thing you always did. When you were out sledding, you get thirsty, you put your mitten in the snow, and you ate a whole handful of snow. I had not heard of snow pies and snow cakes, Jim, until today.
I never went sledding as a kid, as you know, so I wouldn't. I was more of an inside kind of person.
Jim was inside eating salami sandwiches.
No, that was before I went to bed. That had nothing to do with winter. That was all the time.
So what did you do during the day when it snowed in Philadelphia? Of course, it didn't snow that much in Philadelphia, did it?
What are you talking about?
Oh, I didn't know.
It snowed quite a bit.
Oh, really? So what did you do?
I usually had a liverwurst sandwich during the day. Then I tried to end the day with a Hebrew National sandwich with a little slice of salami on the top. My mother was not much of a cook, but she could really make a sandwich. Let's squeeze. 877-301-8970.
Mark from Watertown. Thank you for calling. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jim and Marjorie.
Hey, what's going on?
Continue to love your show.
We're so glad. Thank you.
Today I'm looking out the window and reading my favorite winter poem, which is Snowbound.
Mm.
And Whittier, and he just really catches the psychology of looking out the window.
Do you have it in front? We only have about 45 seconds. You have it in front of you, Mark?
I don't have it in front of me, but my favorite line is when the guy goes out, he says to his family, "Boys, a path." And then he says to... He takes off his hat to receive the benediction of the air.
That's great.
Ah.
That is great, Mark. Hey, Mark, stay warm, and thank you much for the call. You know, think about this. Cooking, reading poetry. That woman was out in the woods where she lives with the dog. They're making snow pies, whatever.
Yeah.
What is wrong with us? I mean, really?
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Charlie Baker is going to be the governor, I should say. Governor Baker is going to be holding a news conference.
And then he's joining us.
We're
going
to be talking to him a little while. So stay tuned. We're going to be here until 2 o'clock. WGBH 89.7 Boston Public Radio.
It's all snow all the time in New England, so it's all snow all the time on Boston Public Radio. The governor will join us, as will local leaders, a meteorologist or two, GBH reporters from all over the place. Jared Bowen will tell us what to watch as you're locked in your house, and CNN's John King on storms which made or broke politicians.
And then we'd like to hear from you, all your calls and emails, weather reports in your town, how you're spending the day, with power or without it, your favorite games, your favorite recipes. When can the kids go sledding, and how are the dogs? All that coming up on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. Welcome to hour number two of Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH on snow. Again.
You know, it's amazing. We got an email from someone a minute ago, said they're amazed that we made it into work. And I say to that person, I forget her name, no more amazed than we are that we've made it into work. Marjorie skied, as I said earlier. And what I did, which is quite unusual, I got on my sled, which Marjorie, you know, I use quite often because I'm a big sledding aficionado, hooked it on the back of a DPW truck and just sled my way right into the studio.
Credit where credit is due. Jim mounted his four-wheel drive Toyota Highlander and drove from Cambridge all over Boston to pick up me and our crew and got us here. It was so impressive. It was like Sir Galahad on wheels.
When you say mounted my four-wheel drive, one of my favorite lines from the late, great Tom Menino is whenever he would start one of his rolling rallies, and obviously with the Boston duck boats, he'd say, gentlemen, mount your ducks. In any case, we're taking your calls throughout the next couple of hours on anything. What you're cooking today, what the weather conditions are, how prepared you were, what kind of music you were listening to. Jared Bowen's going to join us a little bit later to talk about movies when you're essentially a captive in your own home. We're also going to talk to the head of the Pine Street Inn on a more serious note about how the homeless population is being dealt with. So the number is 877-301-8970. But first, and probably most importantly to you, calling us from Wellesley, longtime Boston meteorologist, who's going to give us an update on what's going on with this storm, Mish Michaels. Mish, thanks so much for calling in.
Good morning, or actually good afternoon to you both. I'm losing track of time. Snow keeps falling.
It does indeed.
It does keep falling. Well, I'm going to ask you the most important question to me anyway that I asked at 11 o'clock. It's now noon. When is the snow going to stop, Mish?
It's a long duration storm. It's a, one of those classic textbook storms. It got cut off from the general west to east flow in the atmosphere. It sort of became its own spinning entity or animal, I guess, they're out there over the ocean. And because of that, it's taking a long time to reach its maximum potential and then slowly drift away. So it's really not going to be until this evening that we see the storm fully let up.
You know, John King, our friend born in Dorchester, now obviously of CNN, was disparaging the accuracy, I hope I'm not overstating his position, of people in your trade. I guess we were talking about de Blasio, particularly in New York City, Mayor de Blasio. I continue to be stunned how precise and accurate all of you in this business were about this storm. The starting time, the intensity, the volume, the technology has really changed hugely, hasn't it, Mish?
I have to say that, you know, in my humble opinion, it is really one of the greatest human achievements of all time that we are able to anticipate, you know, these massive planetary waves in the atmosphere and this fluid that oftentimes we can't see unless there's precipitation falling from it, and really determining such detail in such a far reach in advance of what's actually unfolding. It truly is a great human achievement, and that has a lot to do with just computing power and being able to crunch massive amounts of data more quickly. The computer models that tell us about the atmosphere and paint stories about what is going to happen, and there are multiple of these computer models that we look at, they're literally doing on these computer platforms 1 trillion calculations a second. And many of these computer models come out multiple times a day, but it takes several hours to run these models.
You know, the amazing thing, I was ready, I'm a fairly cynical soul. Earlier in the week, virtually all of you who do what you do were saying roughly 1 o'clock midday on Monday, the snow is going to start sprinkling down. I was sitting in the standing in the studio yesterday, ready to ridicule all of you. And literally, I look out the window, and at 12:05, as like clockwork, as the saying goes, how much are we going to have when this thing is over, Mish, in greater Boston at least?
That's the big question, you know, and you have to know we all collectively say, cue the snow, and then it starts. So that's part of why it started at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the big question, of course. All the official records are kept at Logan Airport, and the way that snow has been measured at Logan Airport has changed over time, although there are certain standards that are considered the norm. But there have been, because National Weather Service isn't located at Logan any longer, it's located in Taunton, there's been a lot of changeover in hands as to who does that. So the numbers at Logan are how we look at storms from an historical perspective. The Blizzard of 78 is ranked number 2. It really still is, to me, the benchmark of all storms. And so the number at Logan is how this storm will be remembered, largely, in the history books. And right now, as of, I believe, 10 a.m., according to, actually 9 a.m., according to Skywarn weather spotters, there was about 18.2 inches at Logan Airport, and that was obviously several hours ago. Now, we know the winds on the coast are, you know, gusting 60 to 70, so recording the snowfall totals
sure.
under those conditions is pretty challenging. So it seems pretty consistent with the numbers around the area from Chelsea to Somerville and Everett. Most of the numbers around 10 or 11 o'clock this morning were between 18 and 22 inches in that area. So this could certainly be a top 10 storm, maybe a top 5.
Mish Michaels, when you said the Blizzard of 78 was the second worst, what was the first?
It's really interesting you bring up the first, because it's such a point of controversy and something that I sort of don't even record in my mind as the official largest snowfall in Boston. It was the President's Day storm of 2003. And
oh.
In the storm, we recorded 27.6 inches of snow at Logan Airport. But a couple of things happened with that particular storm. Number one, that snowfall total was the highest in the state, and by a few inches, which is unusual. It's unusual for Logan to record the highest number in the state. Usually we have other locations that have a higher number, but it goes in the record books as the storm ranking based on the Logan number. So first of all, it was unusual in that it was the highest number in the entire state. And there was what's called a coastal front that set up literally right around the area where the snowfall measurement was being taken. And so there was a localized convergence of the air, which created a localized enhancement of the snow. And at that time, there was contractors also working the storm. And we're not sure if they were following the official guidelines on how to measure snow. You have to measure it every 4 hours. Then you wipe your white slate clean, and you start over again, because there's some settling that is impacted.
Yeah.
It impacts the numbers. And so we believe that on that storm, there may have actually been a wiping every hour. And I know it's splitting hairs, but, you know, the storm is ranked number one. And so we don't know if that four-hour standard settling actually was factored into that.
Wow. This is very,
I love people who do what you do. Hey, Mish, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
For taking the time to call in. We much appreciate it.
You know, by the way, CNN is just saying the heaviest snowfall, the greatest number of inches of any city in the Northeast is Framingham, Massachusetts.
Wow.
At 30. We had heard Shrewsbury had passed 30, but they're at 31. But according to CNN, it is Framingham. Joining us on the phone, and again, the governor will be having his press conference in a couple of minutes. We'll go to that live, is the town manager of Cohasset, Christopher Sr. Christopher, welcome to Boston Public Radio. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here today.
Well, Christopher, we've been hearing a lot about high winds closer to the coastline. What's the situation in Cohasset?
There have been some strong winds all day, but we've been very fortunate that there haven't been any real, no real tree damage. I mean, you know, branches have come down here and there, but we've been in fairly good shape, actually.
And no power out?
There's been sporadic power out around town, but again, nothing significant. In fact, we've been monitoring pretty closely. Even our public workshop, which is where I am right now, lost power a little while for about 20 minutes earlier today, but
yeah.
It came back on. So.
You know, I assume your fingers are crossed, but I hate to even say it, but it seems that so far this has been remarkably mild, not in terms of the intensity of snow, but in terms of damage, outages, injuries, no deaths. Are you surprised by that this far into this thing?
I think we're always grateful when the storm isn't as dangerous as it could have been. But we're not done yet. I mean, we still have a tide to come in.
This afternoon.
Late this afternoon. And It's still snow. I'm looking outside right now. And the wind is still whipping and the snow is still falling. But I think we are definitely grateful. I think we're very appreciative of the fact that people went home. And we've had our crews going, you know, for the last 24, 30 hours. So we've been trying to stay ahead of it as much as we can.
Well, Christopher Sr., I was saying this to Jim before, because we've remarked how few cars were sitting right at the window on a major street, and we've seen almost nobody go by unless they're a tow truck or a cop. That's a big deal when people do get their cars off the street and nobody drives. That's a night and day difference in how well you can cope, I would assume.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was just with the fire chief coming up here, and we held back as two large plows came down one of our roads. And, you know, you can't do that kind of work if people are driving.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, there's going to be plenty of time to enjoy this, get out and cross-country ski or snowshoe. This is the time just to allow the crews to continue to do their jobs in whatever town you're in, because there's still a lot of work to do. So please, I hope everyone continues to stay off the road, watch TV, listen to the radio, like we're all hopefully doing right now, of course, and just enjoy the winter. And then tomorrow, when the sun's shining, go back outside.
Hey, Christopher, before you go away, Christopher Sr., town manager at Cohasset, if I had your job and I was working yesterday, I'd need sedatives to get me through the next couple of days. What's it like when you know something like this is coming in a community like yours? I mean, really, what's it like personally?
Well, you know, I've been through a lot of these, and what I'm really appreciative about is we have great staff here, and quite frankly, you know, when something like this comes, you just go right about the business. You know, there's no drama. You know what's coming, and you just buckle down and get the work done. And there's most certainly a lot of work to be done during these storms. And again, I'm not driving the plow. I'm not rescuing the folks, and driving through the storm. I'm just here to make sure all the pieces are moving. And I'm very grateful to have people who just do this, and they jump into the storm, the police, the fire, the public works crews, without thinking twice. And they keep everybody safe. And, I got to tell you, I wouldn't say it's low stress by any means. But when you have people who are really well-trained and are jump right in, it takes a lot of the stress out of it.
I'm stressed just talking to you. Christopher, we hope the good fortune continues. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for calling. That was Christopher Senior. He is the town manager of Cohasset. And as Christopher said, there is a high tide coming later this afternoon, so we're not totally out of the woods. But so far, so good. Danica Hassel. Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. People are emailing about this snow cake deal, and apparently I've missed out on one of the great
traditions. Well, no, not you. We have. Explain what it is. We've got a number of calls in the first hour.
Well, you put all the snow together in like a pie pan or a cake pan, then you pour maple syrup on it, and people call it sugar on snow, and apparently it's a big tradition around New England, which I was unaware of, and you can put nuts and berries on top of it. I don't get it. I mean, I used to like to eat snow when I was a kid.
But does the snow just melt when you get it in the house? I mean, what is up with that?
Exactly. It's kind of like, I was confused because, of course, if you would put the snow in the oven, needless to say.
That's a good point. That's a fine point. By the way, we got to the bottom of the Doppler radar thing, courtesy of John King from CNN. If someone could explain to us a little more clearly the whole deal with this sugar on snow thing, this snow cake deal, we'd appreciate it. Let's go to Bill Ricker, where Erica is on Boston Public Radio. Thank you much for the call, Erica. Hi.
Hi, I was calling to talk a little bit about what you can do to help out the birds and squirrels, even if you don't normally put out seed or have feeders.
Do it.
Send your kids out with a bowl in which you've mixed some peanut butter or any kind of nut butter, oatmeal, barley, popcorn, anything like that, and have them spread it on the forks of the shrubs. That will give them, the squirrels and the birds, something to eat. Also, since if you do throw seeds out, it kind of sinks into the powdery snow at this point. So if you've got any kind of basket that you can lower from your window and put your breadcrumbs and your dry cereal and any sort of stuff like that in there, raisins, cranberries, they'll eat that. And also, if you've got shrubbery, like evergreen-type bushes, yews, et cetera, up against your house, leave that snow be, because the little birds will roost in there, and that's a place for them to be warm.
Okay, Erica, you obviously know a lot about birds and squirrels. Where are the birds right now in the middle of the blizzard?
On my feeder.
So they're out. They're out flying around.
It's amazing. I mean, I don't know how they survive, really. Goldfinches must have antifreeze in their blood. They're so tiny, and yet they're out here feeding away like mad. And there are birds that will feed on hanging feeders, and there are birds that will really only feed on the ground. And like your cardinals, et cetera, they want to feed on something flat. So when the snow is this powdery, it's not like there's really much of a surface for them to work with. So you really need to give them,
Erica,
out a tray.
I have to interrupt you. My apologies, because Governor Baker is beginning his press conference. We're going to take it live from the bunker in Framingham. Here's Governor Baker.
Immediately, we're lifting the travel ban in Berkshire, Hamden, Hampshire, and Franklin counties. The travel ban, however, will continue to apply to I-90, Mass Turnpike. But we are lifting the ban for the four western counties. The one thing I would say here is Lieutenant Governor Polito's talked to a lot of the local officials out there, and they have all asked us to ask the public to use what I would describe as sort of best judgment with respect to going out. If you don't need to go out, I think those folks who are still in the process of cleaning up would appreciate it if you gave them the room and the opportunity to do that. And I think it's fair, based on the latest feedback we've gotten from the Weather Service and from others, that we are really at this point dealing with two storms. There's a storm that's west of Worcester that appears to be relatively moderate, manageable, and pretty well dealt with. And there's a storm, Worcester East, which in some parts of eastern and central Massachusetts is putting down as much snow as it has at any point since it started at midnight last night. And we fully expect that there are parts of eastern and central Massachusetts where people may get as much as another 5 to 10 inches of snow on top of what they already have, and that there are areas around eastern Mass at this point that you would probably describe as being in a whiteout-type condition. So for those parts of Massachusetts, we would like people who have been terrific to date to continue to cooperate with respect to the travel ban and to let our emergency personnel continue to do the work that they've been doing. We've also been in touch with many of the hospitals in and around Massachusetts. We've had conference calls with them and direct conversations. And their workers have been able, as a result of the travel ban, to get in and out of their institutions, which has obviously been important as well. The drifting continues to be an issue, the blowing. There are drifts now as high as 4, 5, 6 feet in many places. And we would urge, now that we've been at this for over 12 hours, the people who can and have the opportunity and the ability to look in on their neighbors, that they do so, especially those who are living alone. The two final things I would say, if you have transportation questions, you can always call 511 and people will be there to answer them. We'll have more to say about transportation issues, especially as they relate to the T, at our briefing later today. Folks are continuing to determine and scenario plan for tomorrow with respect to that. And if you have shelter or service questions, continue to call 211. Those folks have been on the phone since this all began last night, and will continue to be there for people going forward. With that said, be happy to take questions for me or anybody else who's up here.
Governor, you expect the T to remain down through today? Is that what I hear?
Ms. Stephanie, yeah, we do expect the T to remain down today. There are all kinds of issues associated with this. One is physical access to the T, you know, shoveling out the sidewalks in and around the entrances to all the facilities. The ongoing process of simply keeping the tracks clear, which is basically a function of continuing to run the trains on the lines and then making sure they're positioned in such a way so that they can be put back into service at the appropriate time. We'll have more to say about this at 5 and probably again at 10.
Any idea on the time frame for lifting the travel ban on the eastern part of the state?
I think this has all been sort of situationally driven all along based on our conversations with state officials, emergency management officials, local officials, and others. And we'll continue to review this on an as-needed basis. But for now, the Eastern Mass piece needs to stay in place.
Can you clarify, I-90 still closed in those western counties?
Yes, I-90 is still closed in the western counties.
Charlie Baker live from MEMA headquarters, the bunker as it's called out there in Framingham, essentially saying there are two storms. Western Massachusetts, which is winding down, which is why he's lifted the travel ban in most of that part of the state, and eastern Massachusetts, where it continues. He says the T will remain closed for the time being. No date or time yet on the travel ban being lifted, and he seems relatively calm. And based on the calls we've gotten and the reports we've read and based on briefly what the governor has had to say, people are paying attention. They're doing what they're asked to do, which is for the most part stay home. And apparently this is being dealt with quite well. We expect the governor to join us at 1 o'clock, so we hope you'll stay tuned for that. In the interim, it's 877-301-8970. Want to hear from you. Sonia, you're in Dorchester. You're next on Boston Public Radio. Hi, Sonia.
Hi. So you guys have been confused.
We have. Well, you're generally confused. Yes, go ahead.
Snow cake is a completely different thing from the maple syrup story. And let me tell you about the history of snow cake.
Please.
Snow cake uses the snow as the lightener, the leavener. So instead of having to put in baking soda and baking powder, you use the fluffiness of the snow to keep the bubbles in the cake, because it melts when it's in the oven, and the spaces where the flakes were are where the bubbles were in the cake.
Oh.
Historically, you made snow cake because you were too broke to have leavener, or because the leavener in the old days tasted sort of bitter and nasty. And that's all there is to it. It's just cake.
So wait a minute. So you're talking about a couple of tablespoons of snow, not a whole massive thing of snow.
The point of the snow, you sort of whip it in with the flour and whatever else.
Okay.
And so you use that instead of baking soda or baking powder. And if you have a very delicate palate, you will be able to tell the difference. But in the early days, it was only because you didn't have enough money to have baking soda or baking powder or what have you.
How do you know this, Sonia?
I read.
What a good idea.
I thought you were going to tell us some great story when you grew up in the wild somewhere, but it's because...
Oh, you see, I can tell you about the maple syrup stuff,
too. Oh, please do. Do that, too, because you read.
We have several emailers on that, but go ahead.
Go ahead.
Because I grew up in Canada.
Oh, good. Okay.
And the maple syrup thing is not something you just whip up when it snows. The only time you would do it is when you're already in the middle of making syrup, and you have, so in March or whenever you're doing your sugar bush, and you already have hot maple syrup around because you're evaporating your sap into syrup, and it's part of that celebration. It's not something you say, oh, it's a storm, let's make this maple stuff. It's a part of being in the sugar bush. So the sap is rising, and then you have a March snowstorm, and then you do your fun thing then.
Sonia, those were two great additions to the show. Thank you so much for both pieces of information.
Emma from Ottawa just emailed the same thing. Yeah, about the snow bush. Lynn says she brings the maple syrup just to a boil, pours it over a bowl of snow. It will crackle and harden into candy, and it's a great treat, but you have to watch out for your fillings. Martin is very upset about the caller.
What do you mean your fillings?
Said,
like as in your cavities
teeth,
and your teeth?
Oh, go ahead. Okay. It's like candy, you know, one of those pull out your fillings.
Uh-huh.
Martin is very upset about the woman who called and giving the advice about laying out the raisins and the peanut butter.
Why?
And because he said dogs will eat it before the squirrels, and raisins are bad for dogs. So you have to make sure you don't put raisins out there, or just do it in your own backyard and not in the street, because dogs will eat it instead of squirrels and birds.
Actually, there were some raisins on some branches when I was coming in this morning, and I had them. So I was – in any case, let's stay in Boston. Judy is next on Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan on what appears to be a mild version of Snowmageddon 2015. Hi, Judy.
Hello. How are you?
We're excellent. Thank you.
Well, I'm calling to tell you what I'm doing this afternoon for the snowstorm.
Oh, please.
I have a small company where I represent small production wineries. And it's always a challenge to get people to know which wines of mine they should support and how to find them in restaurants. So I live in a large building, and I sent out an email yesterday to my neighbors and said, come on down. And it's a BYOG wine tasting, so I'm asking them to bring their own wine glass, and we're going to taste about 10 different wines.
That is great.
Oh, fun.
Have you ever done this before?
No, I was thinking about doing it in about 2 weeks. And then I figured this is the perfect time because everybody's stuck inside. They've got nothing to do. And who doesn't like to drink wine in the middle of the day on a big snowstorm?
That is really a wonderful communal thing. Now, are there any people in the building you're not so crazy about, Judy?
I'll let you know at 6 o'clock.
That is really a great – call us tomorrow. That is a great idea. I'm curious to see how that goes. Judy, thank you for the call.
You know, Andrew's concern, I didn't even think of this, that when you're working for companies that expect employees to be there no matter what, especially if you're an employee at will, and she wants the government to be more specific about what employees should expect and what disciplinary actions can they be subject to if they don't come in to work today. I mean, that is a good question.
Wait, I'm sorry. What do you do?
Well, you don't know. I mean, they say no one's supposed to go to work today, and almost nobody has gone to work today. But some people are expected to go to work, even in bad weather.
What employer, except the worst employer, is not either emailing or calling, if they've got a small place, their employees, so they're not confusion as to who's essential and who's unessential? Did you get a – by the way, just
Andrea's
as an example –
Andrea's employer, because she's very worried about
for
it.
For whatever it's worth, did you get a call? I got one of those robocalls on my cell phone voicemail this morning from Cambridge saying there was a snow emergency and a parking ban in effect. So my assumption is, with very few exceptions – people are doing that. You know, we've spent a lot of time over the last 90 minutes talking about the lighter side of today and probably tomorrow, for everything from snow cakes to, well, variations on a theme. We're now going to talk for a couple of minutes about the more serious side of this, both the preparation and how it's working. Lyndia Downey is president and executive director of the very well-respected Pine Street Inn. Lyndia, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So what is the procedure you go through, Lyndia, in a situation like this? What were you doing yesterday?
Well, yesterday we were making sure, and really all weekend, Marjorie, we were making sure that
got enough, in case we lost power, enough food to get us through the next few days. We were scheduling extra staff, making accommodation for staff to spend the night. But wouldn't be.
Linda, we have a horrible connection. Can we put you on hold for 1 second and see if we can get a line that doesn't cause you to drop out? That's Linda Downey, who's the president and executive director of the Pine Street Inn, and we'll get back to her in 1 second. Can we take the other call on the top line for – yeah, we can, while we're waiting for Linda's line to clear. George, you're in Acton. You're next on Boston Public Radio. What's up, George?
Oh, hi. I'd like to bring up something about that. The governor mentioned shoveling the access to the T.
Yeah.
And I would like to know why the stations for the Green Line and Orange Line at North Station are 50 yards away from North Station, and people have to go outside and then back in. It just seems uncivilized to me. I mean, there should be a cover or an underground passage or something. Even if it's shoveled, you've got people on crutches, you've got baby carriages, you've got people with luggage going into North Station. After all that work on the Big Dig, we end up with a station that doesn't connect to North Station.
You know, that is a great point, George. And
I
don't know the answer to that, but at least you could have a cover over it so you don't have the snow in your face as you're coming down. I don't know the answer to that.
Let me just say, I asked some people about this. I'm not sure they're right, but they told me that North Station or the TD Garden or whatever is private property, and they didn't want this inside there. But it seemed to me that the mayor Menino or somebody at the time should have just said, whether you want it or not, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll try to get to the bottom of it for you, George. It is a pretty good point. Thank you. Thank you much for the call. Let's try Linda Downey yet again. She runs the Pine Street Inn. Linda, do we have a better connection this time?
I think so.
Great. You were describing to Marjorie what preparation you did yesterday in anticipation of the storm. So please continue.
Yes. So extra food, obviously the concern being that, you know, we'd have more people coming into shelter and concern if we lost power, what could we cook with our gas stove that we could cook quickly and get out the door to people. Our outreach vans have been out really since Sunday trying to coax people to come in, people that may not always want to come in, trying to get as many people in before the bad weather started. And again, extra staff in the shelters and extra staff on outreach, trying to think of everything we possibly could to make sure people will be safe and warm until the snow stops.
You know, Linda, you hear that a lot in bad storms like this, that there are some people who just do not want to come in, even though it's freezing cold and snowing. How do you persuade them?
Well, we frankly go out and use every bit of persuasion we have to people. We try and impress upon them that it's going to be dangerous, that they may not wake up, that hypothermia, especially when people get cold and then they get wet, that hypothermia comes on quite quickly. I will tell you, Marjorie, what is the most challenging are the people out there who are severely mentally ill and psychotic.
Yeah.
They're not making good judgment. They can't make good judgment for reasons of their mental health issues. And so that's the group we're the most worried about. There is a group of those folks that are still out there that we are in touch with via the police, that our team was in touch with last night. But they're still out there, and we're working both with the police and the Department of Mental Health to see if we can get some of them in involuntarily, frankly, because for some of them, this weather will be life-threatening.
Yeah, that's what I want to ask you. Yesterday or this morning in the Boston Globe, Bill Evans, the commissioner, is quoted saying just that in certain circumstances, and I assume they're the ones you described, Linda, the police will involuntarily take somebody in for their own safety. They make that decision, right? Did that happen at all in the last 12 hours, as far as you know?
Well, the police brought six people in last night to the men's shelter, none of whom, frankly, wanted to come in willingly, and they all stayed, which was good news. I think it's complicated with people, the group I was just talking about, Jim, who are severely mentally ill. You know, they're mobile. They're not all in one place.
Understood.
So even, for example, if you tried to get the police or the EMTs ask for a Section 12, which is an involuntary commitment. People are mobile, so our team has to stay with them or follow them so that when the ambulance comes, they know where they are. So it's not quite as easy as, you know, making a 911 call to your house where you have an address.
Sure.
We're talking with Linda Downey from the Pine Street Inn. Linda, you know, just stories I've done over the years, I know that there are people who basically build their own little cabins, like underneath 93 in the South End, right not far from you guys. Mm-hmm. There's a big spot where I know that every once in a while they get routed out of there. But are some of those people out there with their own little set twos, I guess, for lack of a better word?
Yes, there's a couple of people. People who are living under bridges and have made lean-tos.
Yes.
We've got a guy sleeping in the stanchions under one of the bridges down by the river. We've got a fellow that we are worried about who's sleeping under a flatbed truck down near Mass Ave that we've been trying to coax in. So, yes, there's absolutely people out there, and people's survival instincts are very strong. And, we hope that gets them through, but in some cases it may not.
You know, Lindy, I assume, are you at capacity most of the time in winter? I'm guessing you are.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So what do you do with extra people who come in on this one-shot deal? Where do you put them? What do you do?
Well, they sleep on the floor. We have about 30 cots we put up. When we run out of cots, we put mats on the floor with blankets and pillows. So it's not, luxurious by any stretch of the imagination, but it does keep people warm and safe and, fed. So we had 85 men on the floor of the men's shelter last night and 21 women sleeping on the floor over at the women's shelter. And really everybody, every single program in the city was full.
Lindy, what's your phone number and website if people either know somebody or they themselves need shelter through the storm, as the saying goes?
So the website, it's if you just type in pinestreetinn.org, the website will come up.
Mm-hmm.
The direct line to call the front desk at the men's and women's shelter is 617-482-4944.
Great.
And what I would say, Jim, is anybody, if you see someone out there and you're really concerned, 911 at the moment can get to people quicker than we can, because our teams will be on foot until the roads are a little bit more passable. So if you see somebody and you're really worried about them, call 911. We're in very close contact with the Boston Police Department. They're on high alert with along with our staff, in particular for those handful of folks that I talked about earlier that we're trying to track down now.
And I assume at that pinestreetinn.org site, if people want to help just financially or with their person power at some point during the year, that's a place to go, yes?
Oh, absolutely.
Great.
In fact, we have some nice neighbors from the South End who are coming in to help us serve meals and who can walk in, which we really appreciate.
Lindy Downey, we really appreciate what you do, too. Head of the Pine Street Inn, thanks so much, and good luck through the next couple of days.
Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. What are you doing today on this snow day? How are you holding up? How bad is the snow out where you are? How bad is the wind? I'm getting a lot of – this is where we need a TV camera, Jim. I'm getting all these emails of people with their dogs all dressed up to go out in the snow. Too bad I can't show them to you.
That's a big issue, as you learned this
morning.
But
they are very cute pictures. Thank you very much. Stay with Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. It's all snow all the time outside, so it's all snow talk all the time inside here at Boston Public Radio, 877-301-8970. We expect the governor to join us. He's in the middle of the end of his press conference now. We covered the highlights with you a few minutes ago. We expect him to join us in the 1 o'clock hour. Jared Bowen's going to be in touch in a little bit, too. If you're having trouble figuring out what movies to watch while you're cooking in that crock pot, he'll make some suggestions.
We have an update on utilities as of 12:25. About 34,000 people are without power, largely along the coast in Cape Cod. Another 20,000 customers with NSTAR are without power.
NSTAR is part of the 34,000.
Yes, it's part. I was just trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
You're right, part of the 34,000. Apparently, there's no problems on the gas side, but as we said before, the bulk of the people that are having really power problems are down on Nantucket.
Do you find this amazing? Other than Nantucket, there are 20,000 outages in the whole state from one of the biggest storms, one of the top 10 storms potentially we've ever had. It's pretty amazing.
But one of the things they point out is this is very light snow.
Well, that's a good
point.
Where you
get in trouble
is
where it's the heavy snow that sits heavily on the tree branches, which causes the tree branches obviously to break off and fall, which causes them to fall on the power lines, which causes the power lines to get down. Then you remember the terrible ice storms? That's where you get in real trouble, where you have it snows and then it melts and then it freezes again. Then you have the ice, the branches all lined. Or covered, I should say, with, with ice, and then that makes things even worse. Then we always have the big fight about whether the electric companies are trimming enough trees as they should. And then we have the big fight of the little towns with their own electrical companies versus the big ones that have more problems because they're not trimming the trees the way the little teeny towns electrical companies are trimming the trees.
You know, one of the post-mortems, well, that's a poor choice of words here, but one of the look-backs when this thing is over, maybe tomorrow and thereafter, is were the outages or the few outages, obviously if you have one, you're not feeling so great about it, but in the big picture, the numbers are quite small. Were the low numbers a function of what you said, the quality of the snow? Or was there better preparation, not by real people, but did the utilities do a better job preparing for the storm? Did they get religion from a lot of the heat they took in prior storms in Massachusetts and New England? 877-301-8970. We want you to know in an hour and 45 minutes, you know what we resolved today?
What?
We resolved the snowcake dilemma. We didn't understand it nor know of it. Mm-hmm. Doppler radar was explained to us by John King from CNN. So we've actually made quite a bit of progress as the snow continues to fall outside our window on Market Street in Boston. I will say it again. We've been in the studio now for almost 2 hours. I haven't looked outside the whole time. I haven't seen five cars during that whole time that were not either snow plows or public vehicles, cops. It is amazing
how people are doing it. They're very happy today. They're finally making some money. They were having a very dry winter. One of my friends called me earlier this morning. I told you this. I thought it was she made a great point.
What
she said,
that?
You know, you look at the what do you call them, the trailers underneath? What do you call the things underneath? Chyrons.
Yeah.
The TV world.
Yeah.
Underneath the program. And she was saying, you know, we always have the school closings. And why is it this morning, when you know everything's closed, they go through, you know, okay, not only the Boston Public Schools closed and the Braintree Public Schools and the Brookline Public Schools, but the Brookline Toddler Program after school at the local YMCA is closed and the library reading group.
Do you know why you do it? Because it proves your – I agree with you. Well, her position is you should just tell us
what's open
right? Because almost nothing's –
Yes, nothing is. So you have to stand there. Remember when your kids were little, you have to go through – you have to wait for the C's to come along to see if Cambridge is going to be open or not. It would take you forever because if you got to the television set and they were on the T's, you'd be okay. But if they were on the F's, you have to sit there for like
wait to go all
20
way
minutes
again.
Until it came around.
Then they invented computers, which really solved the problem.
Which did allow
you to
go online.
But the reason they do that is because the news outlet wants you to know they're all over this thing. So even if it's completely – unnecessary because, as your friend said wisely, everybody knows that virtually everything is closed. It gives you some confidence that they're on top of things.
You kind of would guess if everything is closed that the senior citizen flu shot clinic is not going to be open on this particular day.
Wait a second, but yesterday you've said several times I wouldn't brag about it, but since you brought it up, I did pick you up and did pick Chelsea up today, Southend and in Brooklyn.
He was like Superman.
No, that was my
driving
point.
Through the snow.
No, my point is
Jim had his cape on.
What did you say yesterday? And my helmet, as you know, just in case, because I do slip and fall often in snow and ice and that sort of thing. But in all seriousness, you last night were a nervous Nelly, as the saying goes. So we're going to be able to drive. We're going to be able to get into work. And the answer is we've lived through this before. I'm not belittling at all the significance of the storm. But how many times have you lived through one of these things? If you take away 78, when was the last time that everything was totally shut down? When was the last time?
I think it was 1978.
Okay. So
as far as I know. And the only reason that was such a disaster is because the snow came so fast. I mean, it just, you know, I remember leaving where I was, spot A, 15 minutes later, there was so much snow. I mean, there was barely snowing when I left spot A, and I got to spot B, and I had to abandon the car because, you know.
Where was A and where was B?
I was driving from Providence.
Oh, Providence.
I was trying to drive from Providence back to Fall River, which is where I grew up, and we
didn't make
it.
How far is that?
Like 15 minutes.
Wow.
And we had to abandon the car.
No, that's not true.
We did.
Is that true?
Yeah, we did.
And what'd you do?
Walked.
Walked to Fall River?
Well, not the whole way. I mean, but because there was – don't you remember the shots? Well, what they had, and they were great pictures, you would see highways like 195 that runs between Providence and Fall River or 24 that runs between the South Shore and Boston or – you just see hundreds of cars
just
abandoned in the middle of the highway because you couldn't drive anymore. It's hard to drive in 3 feet of snow.
So we want to know what's going on in your neck of the woods. How bad is the storm? Is it continuing? And we also want to know how you're living your life this day. We've had some beautiful stories, people going out in the woods, people feeding the squirrels, even though there was some blowback from that a couple of minutes ago. That chicken leg that guy in Arlington was cooking sounded fabulous. Also, the smells are great in those sort of settings. Let's go to John, who is in Cambridge, who's on Boston Public Radio. John, thank you much for the call. Hi.
You're welcome.
What's going on?
I live in an assisted living facility in Cambridge, next to Cambridge Hospital.
Yeah, I know where that is.
And usually I feel a bit like a bit of a jail.
Oh no!
But
storms like this are absolute heaven.
Why is that?
Somebody else does the shoveling. Somebody serves me three meals a day. The window, and enjoy the music of snowplows and the beauty of the storm.
John, that is beautifully said, and that is a totally optimistic view of the world on a day like this. John, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Number is 877-301-8970. Would you not say, with the exception of that woman, Patty, who emailed before, and me, because I don't like snow. I don't like 1 inch of snow, much less 24 inches of snow. How positive people are is stunning. Does that surprise you, or does it not?
No, people seem to be in a very good mood.
But why?
Because they have the day
off
from work.
Nothing horrible is happening?
They have the day off from work. It's like you have an extra day. You have an extra 8 hours or 10 hours to do whatever you want to do or to do nothing. I mean, that's the thing about having the day off. You can sit around watching movies. You can sit around doing all this cooking in a relaxed fashion. People are mostly in a frenzy, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And a snow day is a break from the rat race.
So when you go home today, I'm assuming, based on what you've been saying, there'll be another round of prune chicken at the... At the Egan household?
That's
is that
right.
A safe
I'm going to be inspired tonight and cook everybody prune chicken. That is correct. Let's go to Carl in Rowley. Hi, Carl.
Hello, Carl.
Hi, Marjorie. Hi, Jim.
Hey there. What's going on?
Well, it's not too bad up here in Rowley. I mean, everybody, I keep hearing about all these horrible winds. It's gotten a little windy, but that must be mostly down the Cape. We got a lot of snow, but no power outages. Rowley is fortunate enough to also to have its own, like you mentioned a minute ago, its own power and light company. God bless them.
Marjorie, by the way, there's a bill that's been before the legislature forever filed by Jay
Kaufman
from Lexington to allow for there to be easier for municipal light companies, power companies, and it never gets anywhere. So for those who believe in how Rowley does their business, you should give Jay Kaufman a call.
And your bills are cheaper.
I'm sorry, Carl. Go ahead.
Let me tell you about the Rowley Power and Light. We had a storm. It was more like a big wind and rain storm a few years ago. And I had a couple of small trees fall over on the power lines connected my house to the power lines up by the road. And I called up the power company. Boom! Within 20 minutes, they were there with chainsaws. No problem. I love the Rowley Power and Light Company.
Yeah. But, go ahead, Carl. I'm sorry.
Well, just one. The real reason I called though was. One thing people in a lot of these small towns can do, especially if they got an overstretched, public utilities department, is if you have a fire hydrant near your house, when you shovel out your house, it wouldn't kill people to go over and walk over and take a few extra minutes for their own safety as well as everybody else's to shovel out the fire hydrant rather than waiting for the town crews to get to it.
Carl, you're a very good citizen. Thank you very much for that suggestion. Thank you very much for the call. And thank you very much for bringing up the individual town municipal light companies, because remember when we had that big ice storm a few years ago, Jim, and there were whole massive sections of Western Massachusetts that were without power for, I think it was, 7-11 days, a very, very long time. And one of the big stinks that arose out of that was people were saying that the big power companies, because it costs them a lot of money, don't trim the trees anymore. I think they were very mad at Unitel. That was the name of the company, correct, that they were mad at?
And, I believe that's because do you remember that there was a woman who called when Deval Patrick was governor doing Ask the Governor, who would call every single month about what was happening with those hearings on Unitel, I guess reimbursing people for some of their losses.
That's so that and the reason we got into the discussion about the municipal light companies is because I think there are 20 towns in Massachusetts with municipal light companies. It's
a small number.
351 cities and towns in Massachusetts, a very small number has municipal light companies. And as Carl just said, the difference is that they are taking, because they're small, they're taking better care of their customers. And so they don't have these terrible power outages. And one of the reasons the Cape has terrible power outages all the time is there's so many trees. And I don't know why Nantucket, because Nantucket I don't think of as being particularly tree-lined. Maybe it is. But I know Cape Cod, obviously, because it's less urban. That's one of the problems there. And the trimming of the trees, because it's expensive, has gone by the boards in too many situations.
You know, we've talked about how the storm has basically been kind, considering the number of inches. Nantucket's the one exception. Winds have been as high as almost 80 miles an hour. And according to the Globe this morning, again, a statistic that I can't quite put my arms around, there are 12,804 utility customers, allegedly, in Nantucket. And of the 12,804, according to the Globe, 12,800 lost their power which suggests, unless there's a typo, that four customers.
Yeah, what are those four
on
people?
Nantucket.
What are they doing?
As of this
they have
morning.
No trees. Oh,
by the way, can I tell you on my Twitter account?
Yes.
There's a lot of buzz back and forth about the weather. You know what the most impassioned debate is?
What?
I said a while ago when you were listing some of the great foods to be making when you're stuck. Well, you're stuck is a negative word. When you're in your house for a whole day, sort of captive kind of thing, and at the bottom of your list you had macaroni and cheese, and I thought that was a pathetic choice. Sort of the big debate on my Twitter account are the pros and cons of macaroni and cheese as an appropriate thing to be making a day like this.
What is the con of
macaroni? Well, I mean, it's sort of like a kid's food kind of thing.
Well,
you
can make it much more sophisticated. We're not talking about taking it out of the box, Jim, with the
Most people are not making lobster macaroni and cheese at home. Do you think they're making lobster macaroni and cheese?
No, but you can make macaroni and cheese in a much more sophisticated
way. What do you make?
Way.
Heavy cream?
Well,
is that
I don't
what
know.
You put
I'm
in yours?
Heavy cream. You can never go wrong with heavy cream and lots of butter. You know, Christopher just emailed, and this is a good point. Events like this give people a much desired sense of community, which is often missing in modern life. You know, you're all
out there.
How about
the woman who, the wine merchant or whatever she was, wine broker, who's inviting everybody in her building for a wine tasting at 4 o'clock or whatever this afternoon?
She's really courageous.
I'm going.
Yeah, she's.
I don't even live in the building.
Thing. But the thing is, everybody's out in the street shoveling. And when I was walking down to be picked up by you at
by
the
me,
appointed
yes,
place this
Chelsea,
morning, the people you pass the street, of course, you're talking to because there's only a couple of you passing each other on the street. You know what I mean? You have a little conversation with your neighbors that you haven't talked to in years.
Or you avert your eyes so you don't have to have the conversation depending on who your neighbors are. Let's go to Brookline where Marjorie was not able to dig out today. And Valerie is on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Valerie.
Hi. I love you guys.
Well, thank you. Thank you much for the call. Before you start, Valerie, Marjorie is complaining because her street was not plowed this morning.
Yeah, well, I'm on a side street.
Was yours plowed in Brookline?
That's a good question. I just woke up at noon.
Oh, that's fine. We don't want to jar you, so
good
don't worry
you.
About it for now, Valerie. Continue. I'm sorry.
And, I don't know. Were our streets plowed, you know? My God.
Well, we don't care. Actually, I don't even know why I asked. Why are you calling us, Valerie? What's going on?
I'm calling because I was here during the blizzard of 78, and boy, was it something. And Marjorie was just talking about, about all the abandoned cars
right
on the highways. And I always wondered, and now I have my chance to find out, I always wondered, like, what happened to all those cars? How did they eventually get them out? And I also want to say that I work at Brookline High School, where I think Marjorie's daughter went.
Yep, all my kids went
all
there.
All three,
yep.
Yeah.
Anyhow, but I really called about the cars.
You know something? I have no idea. I know the National Guard was called in. I don't know. I do know that for a long time, you couldn't get to them because, you know, the snow was thigh deep and it didn't melt. And
right.
So I don't know. We should Google that and find out how they got the
cars. Someone will call. Someone will know. Valerie, if you ever go outside today, drop us an email.
Yeah.
Let us know if your street was plowed. Valerie
yeah.
from Brookline,
okay.
Thank you for the call.
I know my car was there for about a week. And,
is that really true?
Yes,
and
yes.
How'd you get your car back?
Well,
you walked back?
We walked back and
no,
shoveled it out.
You didn't walk back from Fall River to your car on the
well,
highway.
It wasn't that far. It wasn't on the highway. I wasn't on the highway. I managed to get off the highway, but, and found a place to park it. So there's a parking space and careened right in and get out of the car.
When was the last time you slept to noon like Valerie did? How great did that sound?
I think when I was 16.
I mean, how great would that be to sleep to noon? Let's go to Everett where Mike is on Boston Public Radio. Hey there, Mike.
Hey, Jim, Michael Glaffer, Fulton City Council.
Oh, Mike, how are you? Good to talk to you. What's going on?
Jim, so I got to say, I'm not a big fan of Mayor Walsh, as you know, but I have to give him credit in this storm. I've been out plowing in the city of Boston since 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and the mayor and his staff have really done a great job to secure the streets for the people, make them as safe as possible to get people, as needed around the city of Boston.
How many hours straight have you been doing this, Mike?
Well, I came into work at 7 o'clock, about 8 o'clock yesterday morning, and I'm still in now.
Wait a second. You've been doing this for 29 straight hours, Mike?
29, 30 straight hours, sure.
How you feeling?
You get some breaks in between to take a nap here and there, but, this is a historical storm, and the wind gusts are extreme, which is making the snowbanks even that more of a serious concern.
You know, Mike, let me tell you what you should have done. I don't want to give you advice because I know you're a big fan of the casino. The deal that should have been struck between Everett and Steve Wynn is that Steve Wynn would personally shovel everybody's sidewalk in Everett if he got the casino. What do you think of that? It's
not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
Mike,
hey,
thanks
Mike,
for the call.
Quick
sorry.
Question, Mike. Quick, are the Dunkin' Donuts open? Let me see if you can go in
They're
and get.
They're not. No, I wish I could get a coffee. They're not.
Wow.
And I've been on the road, like I said, since, well, we started 2 o'clock yesterday plowing, but came in the morning to get prepared for it. But, Jim, also, my family owns some property down on Nantucket, and Nantucket has got buried with wind, as you said.
I know.
And I do know that 3/4 of the island have lost power. I did speak to some residents this morning.
Hey, Mike, we got to go. Thank you for the report, and catch some sleep before you continue. Mike from Everett, we appreciate it.
Tuna melts. We hadn't thought of that.
Tuna melts
is that not
thing.
A great tuna melts with Campbell's tomato soup.
Oof.
Listening to 89.7 WGBH. Stay with us. More snow talk from now until 2 o'clock. 877-301-8970. He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is Boston Public Radio.
89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1 Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR.
It's 1 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm Jordan Weinstein in the WGBH Storm Newsroom. The blizzard and flood warnings remain up for eastern Massachusetts as heavy snow continues to fall in parts of the state. Worcester reports more than 2 feet of snow, and parts of Cape Cod have seen 18 inches. Winds have also gusted to more than 70 miles an hour at times. Governor Charlie Baker, speaking to reporters, has lifted the travel ban for 4 western Massachusetts counties, including Berkshire, Hampden, Hampshire, and Franklin counties. But he says
the travel ban, however, will continue to apply to I-90, Mass Turnpike. But we are lifting the ban for the 4 western counties. The one thing I would say here is Lieutenant Governor Polito's talked to a lot of the local officials out there, and they have all asked us to ask the public to use what I would describe as sort of best judgment with respect to going out. If you don't need to go out, I think those folks who are still in the process of cleaning up would appreciate it if you gave them the room and the opportunity to do that.
So far, here's how much snow is on the ground throughout the region at this hour. We've seen 18 to 20 inches in the Boston area. Worcester is the hardest hit in the state so far with 25 inches on the ground. On the North Shore in Swampscott, 12 inches have fallen. Plymouth on the South Shore has seen 21 inches. New Bedford, 18 inches. Falmouth on the Cape, 19 inches. And Edgartown on Martha's Vineyard has seen 16 inches. The storm punched its way through close to 50 feet of seawall in Marshfield. Authorities have cut utilities to the area around the beach with one unoccupied home taking major damage, but no reports of injuries. Charlie Baker says the state so far has seen fewer power outages than expected in spite of the wind-blown snow. NSTAR reports about 20,000 customers without power at this hour. National Grid says more than 13,600 customers are powerless, the bulk on Nantucket. The Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant was shut down for a time when its main transmission lines went down. On Cape Cod, the islands and the South Shore, with wind blowing and drifting snow and high winds pummeling the region, here's WGBH's Brian Morris with this report.
The region was immobilized by the monster snowstorm that began last night and is expected to continue into this evening. On Nantucket, over 12,000 National Grid customers lost power. Almost all of Provincetown lost their power as well. Snow amounts ranged anywhere from 12 to 20 inches. The South Coast fared slightly better, with about a foot of snow and only a few power outages. Officials encourage residents to stay home and wait for the travel ban to be lifted before venturing out to begin the cleanup. In West Falmouth, Brian Morris, WGBH, Boston's local NPR.
And WGBH's Christina Quinn brings us this report from Cohasset.
Strong winds are whipping along the coast here in Cohasset, preventing major snow accumulation, but it feels pretty brutal if you're out in it. The sea is choppy, but the tide is in. However, there have been reports of 15-foot waves at Sandy Beach, which borders on Hull. We'll need to keep an eye on that as the next high tide is at 5 p.m. Meanwhile, people are playing it safe, and the only ones venturing out are driving snowplows. Road closures on major roadways in town are also keeping people in place. Border Street and parts of Jerusalem Road and Atlantic Ave are closed. There have been no life-threatening emergencies, and only a few power outages have been reported. However, there is major flooding in Hummer Rock in Scituate, resulting in more evacuations, and Marshfield has also reported more evacuations because of extreme coastal flooding. Reporting from the South Shore, I'm Christina Quinn, WGBH, Boston's local NPR.
The Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency Command Center in Framingham is still buzzing with activity as more than two dozen state agencies and organizations monitor the storm. That includes the governor, the Red Cross, National Guard, and state police. WGBH's Ann Mostu is there and has this update.
The National Guard's Major General Scott Rice is here in the MEMA bunker and says he's deployed 300 troops, but they're doing less rescue and assistance than they did overnight.
We're shifting into health and welfare checks and starting to think about recovery afterwards, helping get the roads cleared, any trees down, things like that.
They're checking areas with flooding and power outages, especially Nantucket, to decide whether to ferry resources and supplies. In Framingham, Ann Mostu, WGBH, Boston's local NPR.
Well, here's the forecast for the area. A blizzard and coastal flood warning remain in effect for the rest of the day. The snow will continue to fall throughout today with up to an additional foot on the ground by this evening. It's going to be very windy and continued cold with highs today only in the mid-teens. The snow should end sometime late tonight, leaving us with total accumulations of more than 2 feet in parts of Greater Boston, up to 3 feet in some other areas, with temperatures dropping tonight to around 11 degrees overnight. Right now in Boston, with heavy snow falling, we have 17 degrees. This is WGBH.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. We're talking all snow, all the time. My number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. What are you doing today in the snow days? Are you cooking anything delicious in the snow days? Pot roast and roast chicken seem to be huge among our listeners.
If you have a crock pot, which you do not have. By the way, we have an answer, I think, to the question. A caller a couple of minutes ago said, what happened to all those cars like yours stuck on the road during the blizzard of 78? And Bob in Arlington has an answer.
Yeah, he says they plowed an athletic field in Somerville off and brought the blizzard of 78 cars there.
Trum Field, T-R-U-M Field, yeah.
I don't think they would have done that with the cars that were between Providence and Fall River on 195, but probably the cars
maybe
that were
means
around
from
here.
The area. I don't know.
Maybe they did that in different – I know they have National Guard people out, and they were probably running around towing cars, but it was really something to see, to go back and look at those photographs of hundreds of cars, just people just stopped in their cars.
I know, the photographs are classic.
And I often thought, suppose you were elderly or you were infirm, what'd you do? And those are the people that got rescued by the National Guard.
You know, we've had people talk about recipes, those sort of things. In a couple of minutes, we're going to have Jared Bowen call. Jared is going to describe to us what movies you should be watching when you're stuck in your house. Stuck, again, is a pejorative term. Most people who called us seem to be thrilled that they are in their house for the day and seem to be thrilled by the weather. And we also expect the governor to check in with us this hour. Let's go to Michelle. She's in Sturbridge. You are next on Boston Public Radio. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, great. We love that.
And you commented when that woman, Valerie, said she had just gotten up. What better to do on a nice snowy day?
You're right.
To hunker down underneath the covers. You don't have to go to work. You just don't have anything to do. I was in the medical field, and I spent a very long 24 hours in the blizzard of 78 at work.
Oh.
And then drove home to an 18-month-old who my husband was watching. They had the fire going, and she was with no power, and she had her snowsuit on, and they were their blankets, and they were happy. So I came home, got undressed, and climbed into bed and slept. So there is nothing better to do. Well, there is stuff better.
No, we got that, Michelle. We understand. No, I wasn't criticizing that woman. I was admiring Valerie. It was fabulous.
It's a good idea.
No, it's a great way. I mean, other than the fact you missed the first hour of the show, other than that, it was terrific. Michelle, thanks for echoing Valerie's. Now, Harvey Silverglade from Cambridge usually calls in about some of the weightiest issues of the day. I assume that's why he's calling. Harvey, welcome to Boston Public Radio. What's up?
Well, this is a weighty call.
What is it?
I just got back from an hour and a half venture out between Harvard and Central Squares looking for a cafe where I could get a cup of espresso and read a newspaper. I couldn't find the newspaper, but that's secondary to the fact that I couldn't find, for the first time in my memory, and I've been here since 1964 when I was a displaced Brooklynite, And this is the first time I can remember when there was not one single cafe open. Anywhere.
Outrageous.
That's a disgrace.
I'll tell you, I consider it to be a serious comment on our culture. Because what I found, which completely sent me into the stratosphere, was little notes posted on these cafe doors saying, "Close due to the storm, stay warm and be safe." And the phrase, "be safe," is something which started on college campuses, where all they're worried about today is warm, being warm and safe, and they're not being challenged by life.
We knew you'd work that in, Harvey.
Now I see that what has happened on the campuses in Cambridge has leached out into the commercial world, the world of commerce, and the cafes have closed in the name of warmth and safety. I am really at the end of my rope here.
Harvey's next book is called Shadow Cafe, I'm sure.
This means we've let the terrorists win, Harvey. That's what I think.
You know, I'm, in all seriousness, I have lived in Cambridge not nearly as long as you. I am stunned. I would say the one area where you'd think everybody would resist is the Harvard-Cambridge axis. So what'd you do? What'd you end up doing?
Well, I came home, and we actually have a little espresso machine, which we don't use very much. And Elser and I made espresso, but it hasn't calmed me down any. I really do think it's an issue of a degraded culture. I'm more serious about it than you may think.
No, I think we know you are. Harvey, there's an op-ed in there somewhere. I'm sure you know
Harvey,
that.
Harvey, do you know, I was just appalled when we had a plow operator call who's been on the road. 7 o'clock yesterday morning, I believe, he said he stopped. He's been working. And he's
Mike from Everett.
Taking a few naps here and there. And he said there's no Dunkin' Donuts open either. You kind of think certain places stay open.
There's a Dunkin' Donuts between Harvard and Central, and even that was closed. And, you know, I'm not the only one. There was a small army of people out there walking up and down a nicely plowed Massachusetts Avenue, people stopping one another saying, "Any place open down there? I need a cup of coffee badly." It was a scene of the Hebrews wandering the desert, you know, kind of looking for the promised land and not finding Moses.
Harvey, we just got an email from Kate, who says that Jim's favorite coffee shop, 1369 in Inman Square, which is not that far from you, is open, according to Kate.
It didn't occur to me to go as far as Inman.
We'll have to check that out. I hope I'm not leading you astray. I would call first just to make sure.
Hey, Harvey, check out, you know, there are two 1369s. There's one in Central Square, and there's one in Inman.
She says Inman.
Check it out, Harvey, and get back to us. And we are waiting for the op-ed. The great Harvey Silverglade. Now, speaking of great, a friend of ours from Phantom Gourmet is apparently online, David Andelman, who is going to get to the bottom of the Dunkin' Donuts conundrum. Is that correct, David?
Well, first of all, Jim, congratulations on your new gig at Channel 2. As you know, I work at CBS right nearby, so I figure you and I are going to have lunch or drinks, what, 3-4 times a week?
I would say it's going to happen quite right. You'll wait for my call, though, correct, David? Thank you very much.
I'm very, very excited about that.
Well, thank you.
Great. He's now, taking over, Dave.
Now, wait a second.
The dockyard around there, the bus stop.
Yeah.
Time to hang out.
Yeah.
So, wait a second. Do you know something about Dunkin' Donuts that we don't, Mr. Phantom Gourmet?
Well, look, Dunkin' Donuts is extremely important in the life of the Hamilton family. When I was a baby, my dad was complaining that there was no Dunkin' Donuts on the island of Aruba. Now they have approximately 700 of them, even though the year-round population is about 14,000 people. So, I made a really stupid move, which was this. I live downtown Boston.
We know that, okay? Yes.
And I always laugh at the people in the suburbs running around with your shoveling. You know, it doesn't matter when you're in the city. But my brother Michael, who lives in the suburbs, scared me to death. He said, "Everything is going to be closed, moron, and you literally have no food in your house." So I took the T last night out to Newton. He picked me up. I slept at his house. I wake up, and now I'm terrified that I cannot have coffee. So I go out to his, he has a garage, which is another weird thing about you people in the suburbs. You have little houses to hold your automobile. So I find a pair of snow skis, and being the great outdoorsman that I am, I put on the snow skis.
This is not true.
I hoof it about a mile to the Dunkin' Donuts in Needham, which, God bless them, they were open. It was fantastic. So I say to the guy behind the counter, I say, excuse me, sir, are you the owner of this Dunkin' Donuts? He says, yes. And I just bear hugged him. I said, thank you, sir, for opening.
That's one of the most heartwarming stories I've ever heard you tell, David. That is so beautiful.
Do you have a picture? So we could just really see if this is a true story, Dave Andelman.
Yeah,
a picture
it's
you
on the Phantom Gourmet Facebook page right now.
I bet it is.
I look adorable, Marjorie.
Hey, David, speaking of getting together for lunch, a lot, you're joking about it. You should call me at 555-555-5555 right after the show, and we'll pick a time. David Andelman from the great Phantom Gourmet and the Andelman Brothers. Thanks so much, David.
By the way, I don't know why you two are working. Aren't you the essence of non-essential personality?
That's what some people think. Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure, as always. That's my kind of – well, he isn't my kind of guy ordinarily, but that is my – he puts on snowshoes or skis and goes a mile to Needham to find a Dunkin' Donuts.
That is unbelievable.
So there was one story of abject failure in the case of Harvey Silverglade and one of uplifting success in the case of David Andelman.
So we now have one Dunkin' Donuts open in Needham that we know about, and we have the 1369 coffee shop supposedly open.
In Inman Square, allegedly.
In Inman Square. So don't go. I would call first just to make sure before you snowshoe down there from any place far away. Let's go to Carl in Acushnet. Hi, Carl.
Hello, Carl.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent.
Great.
I just want to say I love your show.
Thank
you.
Every day.
Thanks.
The Leonard Nimoy interview you gave was great. I just loved every minute of it.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm in a Christian on Main Street, and you're right, there's no traffic flowing today. As far as birds go, I always try to feed birds heavily the day before a storm, so they have food in their system.
Now, where do you put it? The you have bird feeders, right?
Well, yesterday I was feeding on the ground because I had hundreds of birds coming in.
Okay, what do you feed them?
Mixed seed and sunflowers.
Okay.
And then as far as a recipe goes, I have a wood stove, and I tend to cook in my wood stove in winter.
That's great.
So you can wrap a baked potato in aluminum foil, season it with sriracha sauce, salt, and pepper. In about an hour, depending on the size. You can do chicken or turkey legs or wings or whatever, and you season that with sriracha sauce, salt, and pepper, with some poultry seasoning.
Very good.
And that comes out great, and then you can cook even if you have a power failure. And as far as what to do on a day like today, it's a great day to clean drawers, listen to BPR, and hunt for a thermos that you neglected to dig out so you could actually get coffee put in it and have your coffee fixed.
Well, you got to go to Needham. Hey, Carl, that was a great call and an uplifting one. Thank you. Now,
let's get a wood stove.
I know. How great is that, by the way?
Yeah.
Now, the one thing he left out is what you should be watching on your television, what movies you should be checking out. And joining us on the phone for his recommendations is the great Jared Bowen, WGBH's arts editor. Hey there, Jared.
Hi, guys. How are you doing? How are you holding up?
We're holding up very well. The studio is nice and warm. Nice and warm.
Okay, so what are you watching?
Well, actually, I have been working, Jim.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
I never take any time off.
That's what I meant. What are you doing is what I meant, exactly.
Well, it did inspire. I put together a little list for you because what I'm working on did inspire a theme, a movie theme, because I'm working on a piece right now about the Huntington Theater Company's The Second Girl, which is inspired by Long Day's Journey into Night.
Ooh.
I was thinking, what inspiration that is for us, because if we're all trapped together with our friends and our families and we can't go anywhere, and it might be a good opportunity to take stock of films that give us a sense of how much worse it could be, like Long Day's Journey into Night.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty tough.
When your mother is you're just taking drugs incessantly and the family dynamics are spiraling down into the sewer.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's uplifting.
It could be way worse. It could be that, like in 1945, the adaptation of Agatha Christie's novel, And Then There Were None, where you're all cooped up in a house and one by one the guests disappear because they're being murdered. But it's actually a fantastic film with Barry Fitzgerald and Walter Huston. It's actually one of my personal favorites.
Okay, Jared, excuse me for a second. I remember reading that book when I was a teenager, and I was like paralyzed for days. It is
with
such
fear, you mean?
A scary book. Yes, I think they started out with, a dozen people? and one by one, they're killed. It's just oh my God, it's a great book, and I've not seen the movie, but I'm sure the movie's spectacular.
It takes place in a radio newsroom, by the way, in the middle of a storm. I don't know if you're aware there's some connection. Okay, what else is on your list there, Jared Bowen?
Well, Die Hard, the 1988 classic, everybody trapped inside a building with Bruce Willis playing the police detective John McClane in Nakatomi Plaza in Los Angeles, and trying to defeat the terrorists by crawling through ductwork and everything else. That's a good film to give us a sense of how much worse it could be. And then if you're looking at the snow, Fargo,
I think
give you a great appreciation for life out there. And that's, of course, the Oscar winner from 1996 with William H. Macy as Jerry Lundegaard, the criminal who just can't quite pull off his crime spree with Marge Gunderson, played by Frances McDormand, the cop hot on his heels.
Did you see, by the way, did you happen to watch the SAG Awards, the Screen Actors Guild Awards, Sunday night on television?
You know why I didn't see them? Because I was flying back from Miami, and what a fool am I to fly right back into this blizzard, right?
Yeah, I would say that. But by the way, you should Google the odd but very interesting acceptance speech for Best Actress in a TV thing for Olive Kittredge that Frances McDormand did. I think it was great, I think, but I'm not 100% sure, so check it out and let us know. So what else is on that list of yours, Jared?
Well, of course, there's the two Stephen King classics, The Shining from 1980.
Jack Nicholson, of course.
Jack Nicholson in his hotel, and then Misery from 1990.
Oh, that's great. With what's her name? What's her name? What's the name of the woman?
Oh, that's
won the Academy Award for that, right?
Yes, Kathy Bates playing Paul Sheldon's number one fan. So she rescues him from a snowy accident. This is James Caan, the author, whom she really, really loves, and rescues him and brings him to her home, where she doesn't quite treat him very well, of course.
Oh, that's a very upsetting movie.
Pretty really uplifting themes on your list today.
You know, Jared. Now what about some? Okay, you mentioned Fargo, which has a lot of snow. Do you have any other evocative snow movies? I mean, Snow Day was kind of a silly movie. My kids used to watch.
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's about how they kind of trying to sabotage the snowplow so they can't plow up the snow so school's closed.
Oh, that's pretty good, actually. Yeah,
but I'm trying to think of any good like snow. Dr. Zhivago, that really old movie. That's a pretty snowy one where they're all walking
Julie
with their
Christie,
big fur coats
it?
Through like 9 feet of snow in northernmost Russia. What else is a good snow movie? Can you think of
one? Why don't you ask Jared Bowen? He's the movie
I'm
guy.
Him. He's on the line.
Well, one of the others that I thought of was The Day After Tomorrow from 2004. You know, that's the film where Jake Gyllenhaal plays the paleoclimatologist who's studying the climate after this massive storm wipes through the planet and buries the Statue of Liberty up to her crown.
I remember that. Remember that. Yeah, my kids love that one too.
Are you depressed about something, Jared, or what's going on here? This is really scary. Listen to his voice as he's explaining these movies.
Uh-huh. So, I told you I spent all morning just re-diving into Long Day's Journey into Night, so I guess that's where my head is at right now.
That's actually a great list, Jared. No, it is. It's a great list. It's not upbeat kind of thing, but there's some great movies, and it's thematic. And as you know here, we love themes.
Do you have
Jared.
Any good suicide and the snow movies you'd like to tell us about, Jared?
I don't, but I did have one to end on.
Please.
I don't know if you're done with me yet, but...
Well, I think we are, but go ahead.
One of my favorite films of all time, and now you can just devote the 4 hours it takes to watch it, and you'll feel like you have a suntan after it.
Lawrence
of Arabia. You're so smart, Jim, of course.
Can I tell you something? I think Peter O'Toole, I was going to say one of the great underrated. He's not underrated. He didn't win anything until he was like 100 years old, and they gave him a lifetime thing. That movie is fabulous. How long? It is like 4 hours long, right?
It's about 4 hours long. It's one of my personal favorite movies of all time. I could watch that endlessly. I just love that film, and he is so great in it. The sweeping vistas where they shot it in Jordan are just sublime. It's really a fantastic film, and it'll take everybody out of this wintry white cold that we're in right now.
Well, also, he's looking pretty fabulous in that movie.
Yes.
Before you go, though, I asked you this a couple of weeks ago. What's the name of the movie that he was in? One of my all-time favorite movies. He and Richard Burton. He's the king. Burton is the something, head of the church
Beckett.
In England.
It's about
is
Beckett.
Is it Beckett? Is that what
I
it is?
I think it's A Man for All Seasons.
It's one of those things. Whatever it is, it is just... It
is that
is
the one
such,
about...
They were so great together.
Yeah.
They were great. And if you read... any memoirs that either of them has written or accounts of them, they just had so much fun. And Kate Burton, who's the actress of Richard Burton's daughter, has great, great tales about growing up with Peter O'Toole coming over to their house. And imagine what kind of night that is, trying to go to bed as a child and listening to those two men out in the living room at the bar downing drinks and just having a really great time.
Hey, Jared, that was a great list, and we really appreciate your time. Great Jared Bowen, WGBH Arts Editor, checking in with us. Thanks so much, Jared.
I think
see
it was
you soon.
A man. I think it was man A Man for All Seasons. Yeah.
Whatever it was
another
great
movie I saw when I was a kid, McCabe and Mrs. Miller. I think Warren Beatty was in it. He froze to death in a snowdrift.
That's uplifting,
It was a good
That's
ending.
Good.
It was very
That's
happy. Okay, you're listening to Boston Public Radio. All snow, all the time, from now until 2 o'clock. Boston Public Radio,
897-877-301-8970. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan, and apparently he is the governor of the Commonwealth. You've seen him a lot in the last couple of days. Governor Charlie Baker. Governor, thanks so much for joining us.
Good afternoon. How are you guys?
We're doing well, thanks.
We're terrific. We just saw you on TV. I think you're still up at the bunker, Charlie. Governor Baker, are you at the bunker?
I've been spending my time at the bunker, but we're actually out for a drive now and just checking in on a few things. We visited some guys shoveling out an MBTA platform on the commuter rail, and we stopped by a fire station to talk to some folks there and ask them. They're getting a lot of emergency service calls and that sort of thing, and just checking out the conditions generally out here, which are actually better than I expected. There's a ton of snow. We're basically in Metro West. We're near where the bunker is. We've been driving around Framingham and Natick, and the roads are okay. The sidewalks look like they need a lot of work, and I would say maybe half the driveways are shoveled.
Well, you know, Governor Baker, it has been better than we thought. I mean, things are going pretty well here. Obviously, there's a lot of coastal flooding in Scituate and Marshfield, but other than that, things have gone, like I said, better than expected.
Yeah, I said this morning that, you know, it was sort of so far so good. I do think the amount of snow that's fallen in the past few hours and the rate it's fallen at, I think some of the folks in Eastern Mass have sort of fallen a little bit behind and at this point are playing catch up. But, you know, the really good news here is nobody seems to have, no one seems to have ended up, you know, having to be evacuated on an emergency basis from somewhere. And generally speaking, the places where we've seen flooding are where people, both at the local level and at the state level, expected to see it. And overall, I think people have been pretty good about staying inside and sort of sticking to their knitting, which has helped the plows and the emergency personnel and the healthcare folks do what they need to do.
Yeah, both of us have been stunned, as have the listeners been, about how respectful the average person has been of your request and that sort of thing. You know, Charlie Baker, it's pretty clear that Mayor de Blasio is never going to become a meteorologist after he's done being mayor. He was said maybe the biggest storm ever. It petered out. You said yesterday this could be a top fiver for Massachusetts. Could it still be?
I think for parts of Massachusetts, it's probably going to be a top fiver. Other parts, it won't be. I said one of the interesting things about the storm is it's pretty clear at this point there's two of them. There's the storm that took place in the four western counties in Massachusetts, and then there's the storm that took place sort of Worcester East, which is still going on and is really different than the one in Western Mass. I mean, if you talk to folks in Worcester, you know, they're up over 30 inches at this point. I mean, it's a world record. And if you talk to some of the folks along the South Shore, where we were talking about earlier, they're looking at numbers around 25 or 30 inches of snow. City of Boston, at last count, I think was definitely north of 20 inches, which is a lot for a Boston storm. So I really think this one depends a little bit on where you live.
You know, you said at your 12 o'clock press conference, Governor Baker, that the T is still closed until further notice. I'm putting words in your mouth. Travel ban in the eastern part of the state still in place. Is that still where we are 90 minutes later?
Yes. Part of the reason I was actually with Stephanie Pollack, who is the Secretary of Transportation, which is why we visited one of the T stops along the commuter rail. I mean, we'll be getting updates on what's going on with T-PREP all day long, and we'll probably have more to say about that later in the day. But there are a lot of things that have to happen for the T to open in the morning, and we'll just have to see how we do with respect to that.
So we're still up in the air on whether the T is going to be open tomorrow and whether many people are going to even be able to get in to work tomorrow. We just don't know yet.
I would say that we'll have a lot more to say about that at 5.
Governor Baker, what's the bunker like? I mean, is it big? Is there, like, rooms for people? Are there cots for people if you got to stay overnight? Do they have inflatable mattresses and lots of food? What's it like up there?
The answer is yes to every single one of those.
Okay? Really?
I mean, you walk in the door, and you literally walk down underground. There is a certain 1960s feel to that. But once you get down there, it's got a ton of offices and a big main, almost like a bullpen, where there's probably, I don't know, 60 or 70 people representing all parts of state government, working together on various issues. A ton of technology and telecommunications equipment. It's a big space when you get underground, and it's got a bunk room that's got about 30 bunks in it.
Wow.
I would say over the course of, you know, starting yesterday afternoon through tomorrow, there will probably be about 80 or 90 people who at one point or another are in there working the phones and working the storm. So it's a big place with a big crowd.
Hey, before we let you go, Governor Baker, and we're talking to Governor Charlie Baker, we really appreciate your call. I'm assuming you're the kind of guy who prior to November, whatever the date was the guy who did his own shoveling. Is that a safe assumption?
That is a safe assumption. My wife and I have been doing our own shoveling for years.
Okay, now if you were home last night rather than a friend's near the bunker, who would have been doing the shoveling at the Baker household?
You know, my wife actually doesn't feel that well, so it probably would have been me. But there are definitely occasions on which she has carried at least half the load or more.
So wait, the state police
true confession.
Yes. Wait, true confession, your wife is more of the shoveler than you?
We both do about half of it, I would say.
Oh, okay, that's good. It's a modern marriage. Governor Baker, one more thing about the bunker. What kind of food is in there? Is it like granola bars that you just, you know, kind of there forever? Or, you know, cans of tuna? Or do they bring in, like, nice hot food like tuna melts and soup and stuff?
Marjorie, you asked the most interesting question. I would say that there's a ton of granola bars and you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And sandwiches and casserole.
Oh,
and
good.
People are pretty well fed there.
Great.
No, if you're looking for an apple or a banana or an orange, you can find it there. And if you'd rather just have a big chocolate chip cookie, you can get one of those too.
What's obviously happening, Governor Baker, is that Marjorie's trying to say in her own shy way on a slow day, if you could invite her out to lunch at the bunker,
no,
she'd much appreciate it.
That message was light flashing. I got it.
Okay.
Hey, Governor, we appreciate your time. And I have to say, it's been quite a first 12, 18 hours for you and your team. It's been done very well. Thanks so much for that. And thanks for your time.
Thank you. And I will tell them that you said that. They'll appreciate it. Take care, guys.
Good. Thanks so much, Governor Baker. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Governor Baker.
It really has been. I mean, I want to say again, I this morning, for a variety of reasons, we decided to be more efficient, picked up Chelsea, who's our lead producer, who lives in the South End, picked up Marjorie in Brookline, and started. I'm not saying it for the reasons
Jim
you
was
think.
Buzzing.
Okay,
from
I started in Cambridge.
And yon.
We ended up in Brighton.
He was on his odyssey.
And it is amazing that we haven't really said this enough. I'm glad Charlie Baker just said, I'll pass that along. The quality of work, we all love to complain about everything.
Yes,
the
we
snow
do.
Plows aren't doing a good job. The whatevers aren't doing this. This has been handled so far, would you not say, as well as can be handled? Obviously, the snow is light in Eastern Mass,
yep.
Which is a good thing. Obviously, people are listening and they're staying home, which is obviously a good thing, so there aren't cars on the road. But you hesitate to say this because there's still another, whatever, 12 hours to go or something. This has been as uneventful a beginning of a potentially record-breaking storm as any I can remember in my life.
Yeah, I think on the downside, obviously, everybody's worried about erosion. And I think in those coastal towns, once again, they were really bad.
Oh, of course, I'm not suggesting
and
that.
And those are the places that are close to the ocean. And I don't know what's going to happen to those
places.
Well,
you have high tide at 4 o'clock
high tide
or 3:30
at 4 o'clock,
or something.
And it's just, you know, the ocean is getting closer and closer to land. Flooding's getting very bad. I have to make a correction, by the way. It was not a man for all seasons.
It was Beckett.
Peter O'Toole. It was Beckett.
You're right.
Exactly. And it was not about Henry VIII. It was about Henry II. So there
Whoever.
You go.
Brianna, you're in Everett. You are next on Boston Public Radio. What are you doing today, Brianna?
Hi, so my name is actually Ziana. Sorry.
Oh, Ziana, you said?
Yeah.
That's a great name. It's a beautiful name. Hi, Ziana. Welcome and my apologies. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. So this morning I got up, I made pancakes, and then I like to have my own cranberry sauce. So I made cranberry sauce. There's a lot of cake in the oven, and my mother downstairs in her apartment is making osso buco.
How great does your house smell?
fantastic.
I mean, really? That is one of the great things about cooking on an isolated day. That is really spectacular.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, and,
go ahead, Ziana. I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to say, usually I really hate these snowy days, but I think I like the fact that everyone has to be home, and you don't have to worry about getting into work. So this has been so much fun. And now I'm going to gear up, and later on I'll go out and shovel.
Ziana, that's a dream day. Thank you so much for your. I can almost smell it through the phone. How great do all those foods
sound? One of the things is, as she just said, if other people are working and you're home, then you get nervous because you're behind. But if everybody had to take the day off except for emergency people and the snowplow people and the medical people, you can't really be doing business on a day like this, I don't think. You can be doing your email. I guess you can still be doing your email if you have electricity.
Speaking of a place where there is no business going on, WGBH reporter Craig Lamolt is at Logan Airport. Hey, Craig.
Hey there.
Hey, Craig. I saw a picture online this morning of a terminal totally empty. What's it like out there?
It's kind of surreal to be here. I don't even know if you can hear the echo right now in my voice. But there's really nothing going on. I'm actually walking to a kind of a quieter spot where I just was. There were a lot of airport employees having lunch, and I'm trying to escape the jazz music that's pumped in absolutely everywhere. I found a quiet spot where they don't have that. But it's kind of been a weird experience. I was here yesterday as people were trying to get on flights before the storm hit. And then today, it's just been kind of weird. There's nobody here except for employees and a few people who I did speak with who did get stranded here and did spend the night, one of whom is spending tonight here as well, because, of course, there's no flights taking off today at all.
What are they saying about what the likelihood is of the opening time when flights resume at Logan Craig Lamolt?
They're saying late morning tomorrow at best, or early afternoon. It's really a mess here, and of course it's still coming down. Right now I'm looking out the window at some really huge clouds that are trying to clear off the flight path, and it's just a huge job. It's just an expanse of white out here, and it's going to take them a long time, and it still just keeps on coming down. So, the planes also aren't here is the other thing. The flights that did land yesterday, they took off and went somewhere else. So this is an airport without any airplanes right now. So they're going to have to wait for all those planes to come back before anybody can take off anywhere.
Craig, last thing for me is I heard on the news, both here and elsewhere in the last 24 hours, that the airlines in general handled this coming storm differently than they have in the past. My understanding, I hope I get this right, is that generally they wait till it snows and they keep flying until it's not safe to fly anymore. But they seem to decide as a group preemptively this time to cancel flights in advance. If that's true, what's the thinking? That it's economically better, that they strand fewer passengers? What's the thinking?
I was at the airport yesterday looking for people who were standing around waiting for their flights to be canceled and, trying to get some good emotional tape of people going, oh, no, my flight's canceled. But they weren't around because their flights have been canceled already. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even come to the airport. So I think that's really the goal, right? I mean, you don't want people here who are just stuck here and have no place to go. Let them know in advance. They don't even come to the airport. Some of the people I talked to who are stranded here are the people who are making connections, especially international people, right? Yeah. So they were flying into Boston, then they were supposed to fly somewhere else. They're stuck. They're here. And most of them went to hotels. A couple of them I spoke to just spent the night right here.
That's the voice of Craig Lamolt, GBH reporter, who's covering absolutely nothing because nothing is happening at Logan Airport. Craig, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much. We appreciate
it. No problem.
Thank you, Craig.
How much better is it to do what they did preemptively so you don't go, you don't have to wait, you don't have to live through the anxiety? I mean, it's not pleasant to have a trip or cancel, but it's so much more grown up.
Well, it is grown up, but we'll see what the political fallout is from de Blasio in New York City.
Oh, that's a very
good
point.
And then he's going to get criticized for closing everything preemptively, and the storm didn't turn out so bad. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie. It's been an all-snow day outside, so it's an all-snow day Inside, what are you laughing about?
Well, Jared Bowen called earlier with movies we could watch on snowy days, and he taught, so we could watch A Long Day's Journey Into Night, which is one of the most depressing plays ever written.
So you know about- that as bad as it is at home, it's better than...
Yeah, the mother's popping pills, the whole family's in a mess. It's a disaster. Joe just emails with another suggestion.
What's that?
He suggests that we watch The Donner Party from the American Experience of WGBH TV, and of course you remember that would be the dozens of people trapped by the nine blizzards in the Sierra Nevada. And, of course, you remember what happens.
I believe I do.
Cannibalism.
Oh, no, I didn't, actually. Oh, yeah, so we so. Do, most of us do have it better than them.
Exactly. You don't have to go out and eat your neighbors because the snow has not turned off the electricity and no one is starving to death yet because we were all at the stores yesterday buying 9,000 loaves of bread and cans of tuna just in case we had to go 24 hours before the stores reopen. Now, we have some great stuff up on our website at wgbhnews.org. You just look for snow is a relative thing. Our buddy Peter Kansas, WGBH's senior web editor, has a commentary up there on our website about the big snowstorms over the years. Peter Kansas is a wonderful writer. You will absolutely love it. Please send us in your snow pictures at wgbh.org.
Nope, wgbhnews
wgbh.org. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Wgbhnews at wgbh.org. And please put your name and location where the photo was shot if you do send us your pictures. And
Marjorie's going to take a picture of me snowshoeing back to Cambridge, and that should be – what time do you expect to have that up on the site, Marjorie? What time do you want?
I don't think we'll be seeing that one.
Can I tell you?
Did you see people going by on their skis?
I did.
Not cross-country skis.
I did.
Regular skis.
Can I tell you, when we have had people for the last 2 hours and 41 minutes call doing things that I've never done in my life, going out and feeding the birds in a snowstorm. That woman from wherever she just called, from Everett, cooking, she and her mother downstairs cooking. All they have there's such a healthy attitude about today. And you just blow it off by saying, well, people have a day off, that sort of thing. People have had lots of days off through the years in snow, when there's been horrible snow. The attitude is really healthy and really upbeat. It's amazing.
Remember we had Vern Lox, who's the
ornithologist,
he's the expert on birds, talking about what birds do in hurricanes. And he talked about how their talons are very, they can hold on to things. I mean, this was like a hurricane for them down the Cape. They had to do the same thing, only there was snow blowing in their little faces.
Weather, the winds hit 77 to 78 miles per hour in Nantucket. Let's take a few more calls. Cheryl, you're in Shirley, Massachusetts. Hey there, Cheryl.
Hello.
Hi.
I called because I spent the winter of 76-77 in Buffalo when we got 16 feet of snow.
Oh, my God.
All at one time.
Not at one time.
No, it started in Thanksgiving and it went through the whole winter. But the first snowfall was over Thanksgiving weekend, and I had just moved there to go to graduate school with my little Shih Tzu. And when the radio came on at 6 o'clock the morning, Monday after Thanksgiving weekend, they said everything was closed. And I thought, oh, we got a couple of inches of snow. And I turned over and went back to sleep. And about 10 o'clock, my little dog woke me up because she needed to go out. So I put on my bathrobe, went down the front steps to the little porch we had out front, barefoot, to let her out. And the snow was up to the level of the porch, which was six steps, about 3 feet up.
Wow.
And she just went out, and she had never seen that much snow, so she just jumped right out into the snow and disappeared.
What happened? Marjorie's described it. So what'd you do? I hate those stories. What happened?
Well, I stood there on the porch in my barefoot feet going, Toby, where are you? And after about a minute, she comes bursting up out of the snow onto the porch and peed on the porch.
Oh, that's a beautiful ending to a really beautiful story, Cheryl. That is good, actually.
It is sort
Thank
of
you,
funny.
Cheryl.
They just disappear in the little drift and then
it's
you have to
funny.
Fish them
it's
out.
It's horrible.
Well,
it's scary.
Well, you don't let them stay down there. You grab them very
no,
quickly.
No, I understand you don't let them stay down there, Marjorie. I understand, but it's still a little scary. Your dog's about the same size as her Shih Tzu, right? It's same similar kind of thing. Right?
10 pounds, 7 ounces.
Is that really true?
Harry the P, best dog from sea to sea.
I know that. Cheryl, thank you for your story, and we're glad you're here in Boston. Let's go to Hampton, New Hampshire, where Gary is on Boston Public Radio. Welcome, Gary.
Hi. I have to tell you, I'm a late 60s person, age-wise, and I'm a limo driver, chauffeur. I drive into Boston about a half dozen times, roughly a day, most of them to Logan.
Yep.
And yesterday, my first assignment, and I'm a bit of a fearful and fearless guy. There are times when I'll drive into the gates of hell with my arms wide open, and there are other times once I get there, I start shaking in my boots.
I have some of that, too. I understand that.
I ended up going to Logan to bring a client down from the seacoast, Now, once I got there and delivered him to the terminal, I had to wait a bit to get my next assignment, and I about fell out of my seat when they sent me to Smithfield or Smithtown, Rhode Island,
yeah,
to pick up a client to drive him 20 minutes to Providence. And I'm thinking, what?
Yeah.
But I did it. And then on the way back, there was fear and trepidation in my soul as I headed north and thought, surely they're going to give me a chance to just go home. But no, on the way back, in the midst of the snow coming down, they told me to pick up a client at Logan who was coming in on a British Airways flight back to the seacoast. I did that, but I want to tell you that the second part, which added much unintended excitement to the evening. When I got back to the seacoast, I live in an apartment, and as I drove up to the apartment, I see these huge trucks out in front, and my parking space is gone. And a guy's run over to my car and said, we lost power here at 2:15, and they're just delivering a generator for the buildings at this apartment complex.
So you were thrilled because of the timing was perfect. Is that where you are?
Well, I was upset because I was exhausted from my drives for the day. It was about 10 o'clock at night. And what panicked me was I'm one of those people that has sleep apnea and have a CPAP machine and needed to have power to run that CPAP, or otherwise I don't get any.
And the good fortune for you on an otherwise difficult day was that you did, because the generators were there. Is that not true?
Well, the generators took quite a while, but I decided when they simply were having problems to just go into my apartment with a flashlight, lie down in bed, and hope for the best. I lay down in bed, and I'm not kidding, 5 minutes later, the lights came on, and the generator is still running. And I got to tell you, I can't mention the name of my landlord, but they and the utility company have to be given a world of thanks because I got sleep last night.
That's a beautiful movie and a beautiful ending to your movie. Gary from Hampton, New Hampshire, limo driver. Thank you much for the call. Now, Marjorie and I started today saying, wouldn't it be great? It's unlikely that'll happen. Wouldn't it be great if Emily Rooney, who often does Emily's List on Fridays, mm-hmm. decided to do a special edition of the list for this particular day? And it appears we may be in luck, calling from her snow fort in the Back Bay. That would be the great Emily Rooney. Hi, Emily.
I already made my snow fort. Yeah.
Where are you? Like, where are you, if I may ask?
I'm in my condo.
You are? Okay, that's
now,
where you're
about to get out, because here's list number one, all right? I can't stand these admonitions from people like Karen Polito. If you're at home, stay home. I'm getting out right after this call. Am I right?
Wait a second. Karen Polito, for those who don't know, is Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth. Go ahead. So what is this list? Wait a second. What is the list?
That's it. That's one of them.
Okay, hold on.
Listen to these condescending admonitions. For the most part, it's beautiful out. Go get some exercise. Walk your dog. Do something. Right?
Yeah.
You don't have to stay inside.
You don't. But are there any restaurants or anything open in the Back Bay? Oh, they are. Okay, good.
Wait a second. Emily Rooney, you're excoriating the Lieutenant Governor for staying in your house. What have you been doing all day?
Oh, I shovel. That's the other thing. I shovel the front walks for my entire building.
Oh.
Yes. I actually was up at 5 a.m. I filed a report for 89.7.
Ooh.
God, how
I've been
impressive.
Honing my tweeting skills, Jim.
How are they going? So what have you been tweeting?
Well, still confused. It's just so embarrassing. You were supposed to give me a lesson.
I forgot about that. It was a couple of months ago. I've been busy. Go ahead.
I'm confused between the hashtag and the at sign, but we'll talk about that.
Oh, my God. Marjorie's smiling a knowing smile,
yeah.
Emily.
Okay.
Now, Emily, before you go to the next item on your list, I don't mean this critically. I mean it lovingly. You don't seem like the kind of person who would do shoveling for everybody in your building. What got into you?
I don't know why you say that. Absolutely. I actually really enjoy shoveling because it's one of those chores you actually see the results. So it's like
great point.
You see the results. It's like, you know, I can't stand things that, you know, like new tires or a new roof where you can't, you know, you spend all that money and there's no... And, this is something where it's very little, you know, results oriented, and get a little exercise.
Great
exactly.
point. What else?
All right. So, let's see. Oh, it's a great opportunity to wear your ski gear and my goggles. I had my goggles.
Me too. I wore my ski outfit today.
Great, loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's one, Jim.
Yeah, I don't have ski gear to wear, but if I did, I'd be wearing it. Go ahead.
All right. You realize, being home, how many crank calls you miss. Like tons of crank calls.
You mean because you're actually answering your phone because you're not doing anything? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, people trying to, you know, tell you that there's no problem with your credit card. Then if there's no problem with my credit card, where are you calling? You know.
Yeah.
They want to give you a loan. So I've been getting a lot of offers for loans today.
Loans, okay. Did you take any of them or no?
No, I don't need any more.
I could use a few bucks if you don't mind passing it along.
Did you give them your credit card numbers, Emily?
No. So let's see what else. I got to do, I was on the air with Radio New Zealand.
You were not.
I was. It was really fun.
They were interested in the storm here or something else?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And?
And they said they were going to pay me.
No, wait a second.
Yes. I know.
It is pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
And what else? Listen to Emily. This is like the most fun she's ever had.
I know.
Okay, what else?
Speaking of New Zealand.
Go ahead.
Join the Australian Open. I never get to see the Australian Open because it's on at odd times, you know?
Yeah, it's 12 hours difference, right?
12 hours difference. So yeah. Good. Mm.
How's the weather in New Zealand?
They said it's summertime. It's
summertime.
It's a different side of the world. Is that it for the list?
That's pretty good, isn't it?
It's an excellent list. It's always a great list.
Radio New Zealand was an eye-opener there, Emily.
You're a good cook, Emily.
I love seeing people skiing on Commonwealth Avenue or Marlborough Street. They're skiing.
But don't you find it a little pretentious at times?
It's good exercise. I like it.
It's great exercise. We saw people skiing by the studio about a half an hour ago.
On Market Street,
I was very impressed. They weren't cross-country skiing. They were in their regular, like, go up to, Waterville Valley and ski.
No, the only thing that annoyed me were the admonitions.
Yeah.
Could you do, before you go, could you do me a favor? Could you do your imitation one more time of the lieutenant governor? Go ahead. Take it away, Emily.
And by the way, she got a personal ride from Shrewsbury.
Okay, fine.
Did we need her to go to the bunker to tell us not to go out?
Well, first of all, Shrewsbury had more snow than any, as of 8 o'clock this morning, any place in the state. Do your imitation, Karen Polito, before
that's
you go.
That's okay.
Come on, one more time.
We did it on Friday.
Okay, fine. Emily Rooney. From her snow fort in the Back Bay. We love you. She was on Radio New Zealand.
Thank you,
today.
Emily. That was a wonderful list, as always.
I listened to Radio New Zealand. I didn't hear her. I'm surprised.
You know, Mary just emailed with a good point. Why are we talking about all these horrible snow movies like Fargo and the Donner Pass and everything? On a day like this, you need heat movies. One of your favorites, Jim.
Which one?
Body Heat.
Body Heat. Let me tell you something. You know, people talk about sexy scenes in movies. Is it William Hurt?
William Hurt.
William Hurt is separated from, what's her name again?
Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner.
In
the
a
younger
red skirt.
Kathleen Turner. She is behind the glass entrance
to
her house. He's on the outside.
That's right.
The filmmaker, whoever did it, I don't know who made that movie, Body Heat, does it in such a way that you can see the air moving. You know how when it's really hot and there's that haze?
Yes.
And he is standing outside. It is one of the sexiest scenes in the history.
He smashes the window with a chair.
Well, you should just watch the watch.
That's
the movie
inspired there. You, smashing windows for chairs.
Well, it wasn't why I brought it up. I didn't bring it up. She brought it up. But let me say, there's another movie. Jared ended his list with a movie that is totally all heat all the time.
What?
Lawrence of Arabia.
Four hours. That's right.
Of bruising heat. And by the way, do you know when
you're
movies?
In the desert.
I saw that movie in the theater. And when you see it in the theater, do you know they don't have movies like this anymore? The Titanic did not have an intermission, even though it was 3 hours long. Did it or did it?
I don't remember.
Lawrence of Arabia went to the theater. It was almost 4 hours long. You had an intermission in the middle, and you went out and had whatever you had. In any case, let's go.
That's
to
exciting.
It is fairly exciting. I thought a lot of people were asking, is there an intermission in Lawrence of Arabia? And I said, sure. Why not share it with them? Aaron, you're in Medford. You're on Boston Public Radio. We're talking all snow all the time. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
We're excellent. Thank you.
I love your show. And
thank
I'm so
you.
Excited to be on.
Well, we're happy to have you.
Thank you. And I was just thinking that I think the enthusiasm about a snow day comes from, like, when we were kids and snow days and how we felt about them then.
Yes.
And I've just been noticing it on my block just in the last couple hours. My neighbor is in his hot tub with a beer, and I just got invited over. And down the street, like a couple hours ago, I traded a six-pack of beer for a bottle of wine with another neighbor. And everybody's out on the street, and everybody's in a good mood, and I don't know. They're psyched.
Yeah, that is true. And the liquor stores, I hope the liquor stores are open today. They're probably
closed. That's a very
closed.
Good question. I would guess they are closed.
Oh, the New Hampshire State liquor stores were closed this morning. Now, they may be opened again now, but they were closed this morning, which was a sure sign that Armageddon was at hand.
Now, have you ever traded a six-pack for a bottle of wine like Aaron described a couple of minutes ago, a couple of seconds
no,
ago?
No, but it sounds like a very good idea to me.
Aaron, before you go away, how do you know the next-door neighbor's in his hot tub drinking a beer?
Because I can see him as I'm doing the dishes from my window.
Okay.
And when I went outside, he was like, hey, Aaron, come on over. So, yeah.
I bet he did.
Is the hot tub inside or outside?
It's outside.
Oh, my God. That's great. That's like being in the ski slopes. When you go to the ski slopes, you're on the side of the ski slope in the hot tub, and everybody's skiing by you, and you're in there and all that. There's a lot of chemicals in the water. That's the only thing.
Fine. Erin, thanks for the call. We've had a huge number of happy people call today. Erin, I would say, takes the cake.
Too
would
bad
you
you're
not?
In such a bad mood, Jim.
I'm not in a bad mood in the slightest. No, by the way, I would like to enjoy this kind of weather, this kind of feel, like all these people do. It's just not part of who I am.
Right after the show, Jim is going to be putting on his cape and his helmet and giving everyone a ride home.
You know, for example, well, like
with
you
a big Superman shirt with the big S.
Do you find when Emily was describing how much she liked watching people ski?
Yeah.
In the city, you know, on the sidewalks and
it's
that sort of thing. And you were describing how much you pointed to me when someone was calling an hour ago and you pointed with a huge
skiers.
Smile on your face. They were skiing down Market Street. What is it that, I mean, I'd like to like that as much as you do. Why do you find it so, what's the good part of it?
It's kind of Courier and Ives, you know what I mean?
Well, there is a,
like the old, you know, New England thing with the fences and the Robert Frost and, you know, people out there and the sleighs and all that kind of stuff. It's like seeing people skating on the Frog Pond in Boston Common. Isn't that pretty,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, except you're supposed to skate on the Frog Pond. That's my – I find it a little – there's a pretentiousness to it at times.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you do it because – well, we can move on from that.
I don't know how many people they were impressing, Jim, out here in the middle of empty Market Street.
Okay. And by the way, you're how happy are you about the – the quality and depth of the snow. Are you happy about this?
I'm glad it's
you spent
not...
45 minutes, couldn't dig your car out.
That's right.
How much fun was that?
It was not fun.
Okay. So I don't want to put a damper
fun.
On an otherwise upbeat this... 3
well,
hours.
You know what the problem is when the snow is going sideways? It's very upsetting because it's in your face.
Yeah.
It's much better when it's coming just down vertically. But because of the wind of the upper atmospheres, as we learned from our meteorologist friends, that's why the snow is whipping in your face, even though the trees are not particularly windy outside the window.
Yeah, and so we're apparently, at least in Boston, according to most of the forecasters and the two meteorologists we talked today, is going to go probably till midnight. It's tapering off, but we're probably going to be in the over 24-inch thing in Boston, which arguably places us in the top 10. But it has been as pain-free a storm of this magnitude as I ever remember. Is that not the case with you?
Yeah. I mean, I think that even though Bill de Blasio is going to be made fun of in New York City for predicting a disaster when a disaster didn't happen.
The worst storm in the city's history is what he's predicting.
It's obviously much better to make people feel like they have to get off the roads and they have to move their cars and they can't do all. He's going
to
be.
Can I respond to that?
Well,
no, not only is that, John King from CNN said the same thing you did. It's better to err on that side. What happens when next year or next month he says, I was wrong last month, but we're probably going to have one of the worst storms we ever had. Is anybody going to listen to him? I mean, that's the danger. I know he's in a tough spot. That's the danger of over-dramatizing what might
I
come.
I think you should never underestimate the capacity of New Englanders to become hysterical about the weather.
You know what? I have a great idea, by the way. Since you like the snow so much, good luck getting home, okay? No, really. Nellie, good luck. See if you can borrow some snowshoes.
You know,
maybe some skis, Marjorie. Because I'm driving directly to Cambridge.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm not going to see you in your helmet and your cape.
Not if you're having as much fun as you're describing.
All right,
thanks
thank
for
you
being
guys
here,
for listening to Boston Public Radio. Our show is a production of WGBH. Our production team, Chelsea Murs, Will Roslip, Amanda McGowan, Catherine Whalen. Our engineer is John Parker. What do we got going on tomorrow, Jim?
I assume it's going to be a lot more of the same.
Brian McGrory should be
we
here.
We assume Art Kaplan.
Yep.
And Juliet Kayyem and Brian McGrory will all join us, but my sense is there'll be more snow as well.
Okay, thanks so much for listening. I'm Marjorie Egan.
I'm Jim Browdy.
And please tune in again and listen tomorrow. Bye-bye.